is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod Brooks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there, good afternoon. Welcome to a Monday afternoon at One Bills Drive, and welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from our One Buffalo studio in the Ed Pro Sports Training Center, Orchard Park, New York. The scene of the crime yesterday. Well, across the street from the scene of the crime, and the crime was the way the Bills played against the New Orleans Saints. We're here to talk about it with you today, myself and Donald, with a lineup of guests coming up and a lot of input from you as well, and you are welcome to join us on the phones. Donald, this show, 3 hours, here we are to talk about that debacle yesterday, and as Bill Parcells used to say, this is why you lift all them weights. You know, it's easy to do the show when you just roll the Oakland Raiders or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. No, right. It's a little bit of a challenge. It will be a challenge.
It's you know, it's definitely a challenge. It was a challenge just watching the game yesterday. That was a challenge. And, you know, I'd admit once we got into mostly through the third quarter, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to turn the channel. My son turned the channel.
What'd you watch?
The Steelers and Colts game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Some of us stayed with it.
Are you jealous?
No. I wanted to see how this played out, and it was ugly yesterday. And it was. There's not a whole lot of redeeming qualities in that game yesterday, and yet the season is not over, and it's not over by a long shot. And I think it's instructive to start the day by assessing where they stand in, yes, the playoff picture. And where they stand is where they stood going into yesterday's game. The Bills still the sixth seed in the AFC East, even with that loss yesterday, even with the demoralizing nature of that loss yesterday. If the season ended today, they would be in the playoffs, believe it or not. 5-4 overall record, 3-2 in the conference, the number two seed in the East. If the season ended today, they'd be in there, and they'd have to go to Kansas City if the season ended today to play the Chiefs in a wild card playoff game. So that's important to remind yourself that, Donald. Two levels. One, there's a lot of football left, 7 games left. Two, they racked up some wins and stacked up some wins in the first half of the season that are in their corner now moving forward. And the most important thing is, where do they go from here? Not really what happened yesterday, not what happened a week and a half ago at the Meadowlands, but where do they go from here? This will be the true test of this team. Really the first, you know, crucial test for Sean McDermott and his coaching staff. How do they get out of this tailspin the last 2 weeks? And how do they get this team playing the way that most of us, many of us, believe they're capable of playing? Those questions still to be answered while the Bills sit right now in the sixth spot in the AFC.
That is a plus to the silver lining, I guess, to everything. When you think about the last 2 weeks, it's been tough to watch, you know. But they do have now a lot of AFC games, which they had last year as well. And they do still
all
control
AFC the rest of the way.
Yeah, all AFC. And so they do control their own destiny. And all they have to do is win now, starting this upcoming week out in Los Angeles. They got to go out there and win that game. I'm sure the coaching staff, they're going to watch the film today, probably later today, and they're going to want to get this thing out of their minds as quickly as possible and be anxious to get on to Los Angeles. The game yesterday was tough to watch, but I think that these guys still understand that they still can control they still do control everything, and they have to play better. You know, if they want to make it to the playoffs, they have to play better, and that's just it. You got to play a lot better than you did the last 2 weeks on all areas of the team, too. Not just offense, not just offensive line. Like, the entire team has to play better from offense, defense to special teams if you want to be a playoff contending team.
What is puzzling and I think disconcerting to Bills fans, and I will speak for myself here, is we saw this team play much better, right? That was not a mirage. That was real, the way they started the season with those wins early on, you know, and that really happened. And it happened with this group, this team. And it's amazing. And I guess I'll start with the defense. Amazing how far that performance on defense has dropped off in the last couple of weeks here. which leads me to believe that that still is in there somewhere, that defensive effort, that good tackling that they had, which has gone away for the last couple of weeks, the solid play up front. I believe that has to still be in there somewhere. But, again, it's a challenge for this coaching staff, this first-year head coach, Sean McDermott, to get back there and find a, you know, find a way to get that out of this team because we saw it earlier on. All right, we're going to get to you as well on the show. We want to know what you think about yesterday's game. We got a lot of ground to cover today, too. We'll start with our Twitter poll and maybe engage you on the telephone line on this issue. What's the first thing you would fix to get the Buffalo Bills back on track? There's a laundry list of stuff that needs to change: run defense, rushing offense, quarterback play, penalties, tackling, et cetera. You can go right down the list. But if you were, if you came to work today and you were the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, what is job one for you today? What would be the first thing you'd lock onto today when you met these players and got back to work? On Twitter, we offer it up as our Twitter poll. What's the first thing you'd fix to get the Bills back on track? 51% of you on Twitter say run defense. 37% of you say I'd fix the quarterback. 9% say the rushing offense, 3% say something else. Let us know what you think. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. What is the first thing you'd fix? All of that and more needs to be fixed. But what's the first thing you would work on? My choice would be right at the top of the list where the people are right now, 51% run defense. You can't sustain this if you're giving up that kind of yardage on the ground. Now, I know as the game got out of hand, a lot of those yardage totals get inflated because all the Saints were going to do is run the football. But prior to that, while the game was still in doubt, the Saints still had their way running the football. And it was bad. It was poor tackling, which really got my eye early on in the game in the first quarter, especially just whiffs on tackles and missed tackles. And I don't know. It's hard for me to say if it's guys, you know, more turnover conscious than they are tackle conscious, but that has to change if that's the case. But a lot of people just not making tackles. And then as the game went along, I thought it was huge gaps on the defensive line, people getting out-muscled up front on the defensive line. That would be the first thing I'd fix to get the Bills on track. Donald, what do you say?
I think I'd have to agree with you, you know. I think if you lose a game and Drew Brees is throwing the ball all over the yard and he's completing passes and his receivers are good and all of that stuff, I mean, it's not that you can live with that, but it's much harder to watch a team run the ball down your throat the entire game, you know, and it's much harder to watch Ingram consistently score touchdowns and jump up into your stands in your stadium. That's tough to watch, you know, a guy actually celebrate, that's disrespectful, you know, and so I think for me, it's fixing the run defense. You have to be able to stop the run. If you can't stop the run, you can't do anything on defense because a team will just continuously run the ball down your throat. It's going to eat up the clock, which is what we talk about with this offense. That's what they need to do. If you can't stop the run, you can't stop anything, you know? Yeah. And so I think they need to fix that run defense and then work on the back end of the defense and the passing defense. But you got to start up front. You have to control the line of scrimmage up front. And that's not what this team is doing right now on offense or defense. But on the defensive side of the ball, they are not controlling the line of scrimmage. The front seven is not getting it done. And teams are running the ball. The last 2 weeks, teams have been able to run the ball down the throat.
You know, on the topic of Saints players jumping into the crowd, you know what thought occurred to me yesterday? You know what they do at Wrigley Field in Chicago when an opponent hits a home run into the stands?
They throw the ball back?
They throw it back. I know. I'd say throw the player back now. If you're in the end zone.
He was finding Saints fans.
I would still throw him back. I would muscle my way to the front and say, get out of here.
Yeah, he was finding Saints fans, and he was jumping up. Now, I did see a few times, I couldn't tell if it was popcorn or beer or what it was, but fans were throwing stuff on him. I wouldn't even have jumped in. That's dangerous to do, to jump in the opposing teams. You never know what people are crazy.
Yeah, you know, you have no complaint if you jump into opposing stands.
Right, exactly. But he did it a few times, and it's like, man, this is crazy.
I know. I didn't like to see that either. And, again, just throw him back. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What's the first thing you'd fix to get the Bills back on track? A couple of tweets. A tweet from WGR Janitor. I'd fix your endless spewing of optimism that shouldn't exist. This team isn't good, John. Just because they're the sixth seed now doesn't make them good. I'm not saying they're good. I'm saying they're the sixth seed. That's real. That's reality. That's not optimism. They are the sixth seed right now. Are they going to wind up that way? Not if they don't fix things. I'm not saying they're good. And I will spew as much optimism as I care to, as a matter of fact. here's what's interesting. Tick Nagger tweets in, I don't think it's a coincidence that as soon as Darius was traded, our run defense declined. Not saying Darius was a force, but at least he kept the rotation more fresh. I'm glad he was traded, but it will have a short-term effect. I've been wrestling with that all morning long, Donald, really, the Darius effect, the lack of Darius effect. I think we all understand why he was dealt away. The big contract, obviously, the belief, I think, among the coaching staff and the leadership here, the football leadership, that he was not part and not going to be a part of their culture that they're trying to build because of, you know, the off-field issues and effort and being ready to play. And I'm pretty sure that's why he was dealt away. I felt it was, at the time even, a culture move. You know, it was, I think we said it, this was what, back in about a week before the trade deadline, right? The Friday before the trade deadline?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember saying to you on the air, you know, they just couldn't abide him being that player, making that salary on this team, what they're trying to build moving forward. Now, when you do that, and we said this then too, you are trading away talent. And Darius had talent. How much talent? How much did he apply that talent? That's debatable. We were looking at play numbers. He's really not heavy in heavy rotation, even with Jacksonville now, in terms of getting a lot of snaps. When he's on the field, does he have a role to play? Yes, he does, but he doesn't do it consistently, and that's why he's gone from here. Do the Bills miss him? You could argue that, and I'd listen to that argument.
I think they do miss him right now. I think teams are looking at this defensive line. And look, this is – I think teams feel like they found a blueprint to beating this defense, all right? They can't stop the run. Marcell Dareus is not there anymore. He was their big man up front. They can't stop the run, and teams are going to continue to just try to run it down, you know, down the Bills' throat. And it's going to – again, this week, Melvin Gordon, I believe the running back's name is, they're going to try to do the same thing. And now the Chargers throw the ball all over the field with Phillip Rivers. But I would almost guarantee you that they're going to come into this thing. And those first 15 scripted plays that we talked about like a lot last week, it's going to be a lot of runs in there to see how much yardage can we get on this. And if it's working out, they're going to stick with that run game. They have to get that thing fixed. And that's on the defensive line. The linebackers, they're not playing good gap control. They're missing tackles. I mean, I saw one play where, you know, I think it was Ingram's belt was just pulled off. And it's like – my son pointed out, like, Dad, he just pulled his belt off. And I'm like, that's because he didn't wrap him up and tackle him the right way. He just got a hold of his belt and kept going. You have to play stronger up front, more stout against the run. And you got to, at the end of the day, you got to tackle. There's too many missed tackles out there on the field. And I don't know, you know, we talk to some players. We hear the coaching staff talk about it. I don't know what that is. I didn't play defense at this level. But you have to play better against the run. You have to tackle. And if you're not tackling, teams will continue to just run the ball down your throat.
And I don't know what happened to the tackling, because in the first 4 weeks when defense was going well, four or five weeks, we talked about that. Now, you know, look at this team. They tackle now. They missed tackles for the last couple of years. Look at them now. They've solved that. You know, fundamental. They tackle well. And then it went away, especially the last 2 weeks against the Jets and the Saints yesterday. I don't know what happened there. I'd love to get a sense of what went on there. But your thoughts, please. The phone lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Ed in Rochester. Hello, Ed. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. How are you?
Good.
So, I mean, yesterday was such a debacle that it was almost surreal. But, you know, after the Bills game, a buddy and me, we got to watch the Atlanta and Dallas game. And you know, I'm sitting there thinking, watching that Atlanta team beat up Dallas, I was thinking, how did the Bills team that we just watched go down to Atlanta and beat that team? And, I mean, the point of that is that the league is so upside down this year that, you know, I just can't tell week to week, you know, what's going to happen. So maybe there's still a glimmer of hope, and maybe in like 2 weeks from now, you know, you guys can have a fun Monday show. You know, maybe the Bills can turn it around again, because it just seems like week to week, I just have no idea, you know, what we're going to see from any team, really. So that's all.
Okay. Yeah, we talk about that a lot on this show, Ed. It is a week-to-week league, and people don't want to hear it today, and it'll probably make some people angry, but there is, yeah, a glimmer of hope. Of course there is. There's seven games left. There's almost half a season left. They played terrible yesterday. They played awful the week before. The season is not over, as much as people won't want to hear that this Monday, but that's the fact. That's what the standings say. All AFC games remaining. More than enough chances to make up for yesterday, an NFC loss, by the way. And again, you don't want to hear it today. You want to pound down the coach, pound down the defense, pound down the quarterback. I get that. We'll sit here for 3 hours and listen to that. But it's not over.
It's not over. I mean, technically, yeah, you still control. They control everything that they want to control, and that's their destiny into the playoffs. They don't have to right now. They don't have to worry about anybody else losing or anything like that. All they got to do is win games, all right? Continue to win your games, and you have so many AFC opponents now, seven games, all AFC opponents, so they control everything that they want to control. They got to look at themselves and say, do we want this or not? All right, guys, like last week you lost against a divisional opponent. This week in a bad fashion, and this week you lost at home, and that was something that I didn't expect them to come out and play like that at home either.
No.
You know, and this was a team that was playing very, very good at home. So they have to go back and look at themselves in the mirror individually and collectively as a team. I don't care if they have to have players-only meetings, whatever it takes to get this thing turned around. God, why are we not tackling? You know, what is the deal there? How come we can't get our run game going, which is our bread and butter? You know, I mean, they have to look at themselves in the mirror and get this thing turned around because they still do control everything that they want to control.
Ed mentioned, you know, the Atlanta game, how the Bills October 1st went down there and played well. And you think back to what was going well back then, and a lot of it was takeaways. They were taking the ball away. I mean, the amazing Tre'Davious White play on the fumble, I guess it was, and ran it back in. You know, you had a couple of weeks, you had a five-week stretch
That's
where they got 15 takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
And it covered up a lot of their flaws defensively, I believe, that five-week stretch. You got to fix those flaws and hope that the takeaways come back. There's no guarantee it will. Phil calling from North Tonawanda. Hello, Phil. Welcome.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about Rick Dennison's job that he did yesterday. I think it might have been the worst I've ever seen. The first, we ran the ball right down the field, get to the 18-yard line, and he throws three times to the end zone, and we have to kick a field goal. I think he has a mentality sometimes that, okay, we're in field goal range, let's take a chance. I can't think that the first 15 plays were scripted that you'd throw it three times from the 18-yard line to Kelvin Benjamin. But what I want to say is I think his job was the easiest this week because you should take the New Orleans Saints game plan and play it against it, implement it. Run the ball the way they did behind a fullback, using the tight end to block the linebackers. It was textbook how you win the game at New Era Field. Run the ball down their throat, even when you have one of the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL history. Run the ball and don't get away from it. Shady ran the ball right down the field, and it seemed like we never ran the ball the rest of the game. Tyrod Taylor gets a bad rap because of the coaching that's being done to him. I really think if you get somebody, you got to know when to run the ball and know when to pass the ball. And I tell you, Dennison's been off. Yesterday was the biggest example.
Hey, all right, Phil, thank you. They had their first down at the 19. They ran first and 10 at the 19-yard line, got 1 yard, and then threw it twice, so it wasn't three straight. But I see what you're saying. They have to be able to run the ball. That's what they're supposedly built on. And it's been a little bit less than inconsistent now after yesterday's performance. I guess I'm looking for – I'll tell you one thing I'm looking for. I'm looking for more Pat DeMarco. He only played, 14 plays on offense yesterday. I think he needs to be in there more. That's about one-third of the offensive snaps. And I'm looking for running out of, you know, spread formations too, a combination of both. There's no one key. Better play by the offensive line is important. But they have to be able to run the ball. And the caller's right. And, again – you know, the Saints, with the lead, were able to just focus solely on the run. And that's why those numbers, one of the reasons why those numbers are so inflated. But even while the game was in doubt for a while there into the second quarter, they were determined to run and did run. And I, for one, quite frankly, underestimated how well the Saints did run the football or would be able to run the football, not just against Buffalo, but against anybody.
Look, the teams that go into the playoffs are teams, yeah, and we always talk about this. It's a quarterback lead. You got to have a good quarterback. The New England Patriots, you know, with arguably the best quarterback in the history of the game, they run the ball a lot more than people think. If you look at the stats, they run the ball a lot, all right? They pass efficiently, but they run the ball. They use their different running backs in different ways, you know? And so the New Orleans Saints yesterday, they ran the ball effectively. If you want to go into the playoffs and you want to make a run in the playoffs, late in the season, you got to be able to play strong, stout defense, shut teams down, and you have to be able to run the ball, all right? And then your quarterbacks can make plays through the passing game. But the NFL, college football, High school football, you have to be able to run the ball if you want to be a winning team. You can't be one-dimensional and just be able to pass the ball, which that's not what they're strong at doing right now either.
Right now, the offense is no dimension.
Exactly, right? So if you can't run the ball and you're one-dimensional trying to pass the ball, a defense knows that, and they're going to pin their ears back, and they're going to rush at your quarterback. Now, passing the ball, teams now have a blueprint for Tyrod Taylor. All right, they're not rushing him the same way that teams were in the past couple of years. They're dropping back into coverage and rushing, you know, three or four guys, and they're saying, Tyrod Taylor, you have to beat us passing the ball. You can't run it because we're in a zone. You have to be able to break down this zone with your eyes, and he hasn't been able to do that. So if he's not able to do it right now, what do you have to do? You got to run the ball. And that starts with the offensive line. Once again, it goes back to controlling the line of scrimmage. All right? If you can't control the line of scrimmage on defense, teams are going to run the ball down your throat. If you can't control the line of scrimmage on offense, you won't be able to run the ball. And they're not controlling the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball right now. That's what they have to get corrected.
Cameron Jordan said it yesterday, the pass rush specialist for the New Orleans Saints after the game. What they did against Tyrod Taylor, and we've heard this before about Tyrod. This is not new. I got to find the quote here. He said, we came out and did what we had to do. We knew that Tyrod Taylor would try to scramble. We pretty much had eliminated that, except we got a little hungry on some sacks. We kept him in the pocket, he said, Cameron Jordan said, and made him a quarterback. And you can see it, Jordan and Okafor, the other outside guy with outside rushing lanes, and we're not just charging at the quarterback. They wanted to keep in the pocket and force him to beat him with his arm. That's the blueprint. That's what teams do. The Bills know that. You know, that's been a common theme. You know, the Jets have said it in the past, keep him in the pocket, make him be a quarterback. The Baltimore Ravens said it in the opener in 2016, make him keep him in the pocket, make him be a quarterback. You got to fix that, and you got to know that. And if they're going to do that, you got to beat that. If you're Tyrod Taylor and the Buffalo offense, you got to say, this is what we've seen. This is how teams are going to play us. We got to make plays.
You got to make plays. You got to beat that. And I don't, you know, now you have some receivers, you know, and I think at the end of the day, Tyrod has to do a much better job of pulling the trigger. There were a few times yesterday where, I could see on TV, you know, Kelvin Benjamin is one-on-one. He's, you know, and the dude is 6'5", 6'6". Throw him the ball up. You know, if you're not able to move the ball, you need a big play right now. So you're going to have to take a chance. And how do you take a chance? You throw the ball up to your big receiver, give him a chance to make a play, and that can change everything. Well, now everybody's like, all right, let's go, you know. But if you never give him that opportunity, then you'll never know, you know, what he can do. And you always just throw the ball down, check down. Because that's what teams are going to do now.
Yeah.
They're going to drop back into coverage. And they're going to – it's basically like prevent type of defense, you know. And you can throw it underneath, and all we're going to do is run up and make the tackles. And you won't be able to pick up those first downs, especially when you're having negative plays. That's another thing they have to correct is those negative plays on early downs, penalties, sacks, whatever, negative running plays. But teams are dropping back into a prevent type of defense, and he's forced to check the ball down, and they're just running up making tackles. So what do? You got to throw the ball up to your big receivers. Throw it up to Kelvin Benjamin. Throw it up to Charles Clay. Those guys got to make plays for you. And if they can't make plays for you, then, you know, now you got to figure something else out. But right now you have those guys. Use them.
There were so many low points in that game yesterday, but I have one that sticks out to me, and it came fairly early in the game. And it's the one that kind of haunts me from that game. And I'll tell you when it was. It was second quarter, about midway through, 7 minutes left. Bills had a first down at their own 30-yard line, trailing 14-3. The game was still in play anyway. And they sent Kelvin Benjamin to the left side. He got open downfield against what looked like zone coverage from the Saints. And Tyrod
like
had
a flag
him.
Route?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was open about 15, 20 yards downfield on first and 10. And Tyrod, I don't know if he didn't see him, didn't care to force it in there. It wouldn't have been that much of a force. Instead, check down through LeSean McCoy for a one-yard pickup. Now it's second and nine, third and two, and then you punt it away. But that play to me, I was like, come on. This is what we talked about all last week, and you talked about it last Tuesday. Here's Kelvin Benjamin. Here's what he presents. Will you use it? Will you follow through and use this? Will you use this weapon, this huge target downfield? The answer, resoundingly yesterday, I think, was no, not yesterday. And they've got to coach him through that this season anyway. They've got to get him to chuck it downfield. Here's Kelvin Benjamin, big 6'6" target, big, right. Wide. you know, open sometimes, maybe barely open sometimes. You got to use them. And I think that play bothers me. That, of any play in the game, that the first and 10 at the 30, when he just didn't throw it to Calvin Benjamin, instead checked down to Shady, that one really sticks with me.
They showed that on the broadcast, you know, and I'm like, wow, like you got to give him that opportunity. He is your number one receiver, all right? And look, I don't want him to just look at the number one receiver all the time, or just look at Calvin Benjamin all the time, or Charles Clay, or whoever. But in that type of situation, you have to give him the ball. You know, don't check it down to LeSean McCoy. Don't check it down to Mike Tolbert. All they're going to do is run up and make the tackle. You can't check it down to these guys all the time and expect for LeSean McCoy to make the entire stadium miss. It doesn't work like that, all right? Like, guys can tackle on the other side of the ball. And they know, and that's why every time he would go, he would turn to his left to throw a little flare route out to LeSean McCoy. It gets batted down. Teams know, all right, when he drops back, if he doesn't see what he wants, either he's going to take off or he's going to throw that flare route. And the defensive ends jump up and knock that ball down, you know. So he has to take more chances. He has to be better at reading the defense and throwing the ball on time, you know. And that's what it is. If you want to beat a zone defense, you got to throw the ball on time. Like, you have to see it, anticipate it, and throw it into that window, and your receiver has to be there in that window, or you'll never – nobody will be open, because guys are sitting in every single zone, and they can move left and right. They can move laterally and pick that ball off if you don't throw the ball on time, which is something that he hasn't, you know, been that good at, but he has to get better at doing it, because teams – truly have the blueprint to stop Tyrod Taylor now.
Want to hear your thoughts on the game yesterday and what you would fix first. What's job one for the Bills coaching staff moving forward from yesterday's tough loss? Greg calling from Rochester. Hello, Greg. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. The thing that kind of stuck out to me yesterday was that it seems like, I don't know why he's hesitant about making passes, but it's almost like he's trying to worry himself out of a job because he's so concerned for some reason about stretching the ball down the field, and throwing the ball more than 20, 25 yards. It's always these dumb little short dump outs or, you know, something to the tight end that's, or like you said, the swing passes. And I don't know if it's as concerned like when it comes contract time that he's worried about his stats and money, or if there's another reason he's afraid it's just going to get intercepted. And, I mean, I guess if you're an NFL quarterback, don't you kind of have to just accept the fact that interceptions are going to happen? And, you know, it could cost you a game, but don't worry about it when it happens, because you're also going to throw scores and touchdowns. So, you know, you got to, I don't know, I hate to coin a phrase, but kind of take the good with the bad, right, don't you?
Yeah, risk-reward, right? Risk an interception for the big payoff. If you don't get it picked, you make a big play downfield. It's risk-reward.
Yeah, it's about losing a game because you're afraid to throw the ball down the field, so you hold on to the ball. Well, I got news, my friend. You're losing the game anyway, so Do something.
Look, this is, my uncle always says, scared money don't make money. And you know.
I like that.
Scared money don't make money. If you're scared and you're never going to take a chance, then you're never going to grow. You're never going to do anything. You know, he has to take a chance and just see what Calvin Benjamin can do. Because right now, yeah, they still have to learn each other. But you'll never learn each other if you never give him that opportunity, especially when everybody in the NFL knows what Calvin Benjamin does. Everybody knows he's not a burner. Everybody knows you throw it up to him. And
I think your uncle said this too, right? Most of the things I usually said.
No, he didn't say that.
I've immortalized Donald's famous quote from last Friday. I just pulled it out here too. Most of the things I said, I usually said them. That's the truth. I'd spent the entire weekend before the game trying to sort through that. It was like a Rubik's Cube of illogic. I'm like, most of the things I said, I usually said them. That's the truth. I don't know. It's like a mind teaser or something. We've got this up on the wall.
It makes sense. Yes.
It does not make sense. That's what I'm saying. Most of the things I usually said them. And your uncle
I need
tell
to put
you that,
that
too?
On my tombstone.
Most of the things I say, I said.
I okay. usually said them in my obituary. Most of the things I say, I said. I usually said them. That's the truth.
They were talking a lot in the locker room. I was there in the locker room after the game yesterday, and we scooped up some of the sound from the Buffalo Bills after that terrible loss to the Saints yesterday. Time now for Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Head coach Sean McDermott on yesterday's loss.
This is not easy to take, not an easy pill to swallow, especially at home. And our fans deserve more. And so we go back hard at work to give them more. You know, we're building, and we're going to continue to be honest with ourselves when we look at the tape. And like I said before, we got out-coached. That starts with me, and we got out-played. So we're going to take a hard look at it.
Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, that game was a disaster.
Horrible game. Offense didn't get anything going. That starts with me. Just an overall bad game. Something that's a team that we have to learn from. I definitely have to learn from this one. Just a bad game overall.
Running back LeSean McCoy on the problems with the Buffalo offense.
Too many negative plays, too many penalties, too many backed up situations. I mean, we just didn't play well.
You feel, you're 5-2, now you're 5-4. You're right back in the schmozzle of all these teams. Did you feel like you kind of let something slip away here?
Well, it means we lose games. I mean, obviously you want to win them. But the only thing we can do right now is just fight, and win games. We're still in a solid position. So I go out there and next week pick up a win. Just got to get one and let them keep rolling.
Wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, how does this team pick up the pieces?
I'm with the team, you know what I'm saying? Whatever they need me to do, I'm here, you know what I'm saying? I think we just got to, you know what I'm saying, go correct the mistakes. Because we were finding mistakes on film, you know, so watch film. I think, you know what I'm saying, just be critical with yourself, even me. Even I'm going to watch my game and try to make myself better.
Linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, the Bills gave up almost 300 yards on the ground.
It's just frustrating. I mean, this is a physical game. It's a man whoop a man type of game, and they whooped us, and that's the second time we've taken a butt whooping in a row. And as a former defensive lineman and front seven member, it's just ridiculous. It's uncalled, and we have to do better up front if we ever want to have a chance of winning another game.
Safety Micah Hyde on how the Saints exploited the Bills' defense.
They got two good backs. We knew that coming in. You know, we knew coming in how Ingram was going to run the ball downhill. We knew how 41 was a huge factor in the run game, the bounce game, screen game, third down, running routes. I mean, we knew that coming in. It's just we didn't execute.
Linebacker Preston Brown, what's wrong with the Bills' defense the last couple of games?
Tough to answer because we've just been getting outplayed this last two games. I mean, it's not like we got new defense or new plays. We're doing the same exact thing. People running the exact same runs. Now they're getting first downs and running for however many yards they had today. So we got to get it fixed because we got a good running back next week, and then we got to that, and we got to that. So we got to find ways to make it stop, or it's going to keep happening.
There you go, Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. John Murphy and Donald Jones just getting rolling here. Coming up at 1 o'clock, we're going to hear from Sean McDermott, his Monday news conference. That's coming up live at 1 o'clock. Chris Brown joins us at 2 o'clock today. We're going to talk about a new documentary that's coming in the next couple of weeks here in Buffalo about the life and times of former Bills owner Ralph Wilson, Bills owner and founder. And the documentary is called Ralph. We'll talk with Lynn Bader of WNED-TV about that coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. Plus, more of your phone calls, more of your response, more of your feedback to yesterday's loss. Plenty of time for that. Donald and I, when we return, we'll give you our likes and dislikes from yesterday's games. The list of likes?
A little bit longer.
No, dislikes is longer than likes.
Dislikes is longer.
Yeah, the list of dislikes is a lot longer. That's coming up. Plus your phone calls. John Murphy Show. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
It's Colt Day in Orchard Park. It is halftime in New Era Field, and the Buffalo offense has yet to warm up. They trail the Saints 17-3 at the half. First and goal from the 5. Drew Brees on the pitch to Alvin Kamara again. Heads to the right flag. Gets into the end zone. Touchdown, New Orleans. Snap, and Brees does give it to Ingram, who tries the middle. Ingram still fighting. Gets into the end zone for the touchdown. 3-yard touchdown run, his third today. Now Brees going to throw it.
from the 7-yard line, out of the shotgun, looks, pumps once, gets away from pressure, still eyes downfield as he rolls to his left. Now Breeze is going to run it, and he runs into the end zone, touchdown. Second and 7, they run Edmonds again, and he has room over the left side, gets outside Buffalo 30, inside the 25, he's headed to the end zone. Trey Edmonds, touchdown New Orleans, a 41-yard run around the left side. Total collapse for the Buffalo Bills.
That's Game Rewind presented by Advanced Alarm. The Advanced Alarm Game Rewind. Advanced Alarm providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. It is John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We're live at One Bills Drive. Your phone calls are welcome. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. What we liked, what we didn't like in yesterday's game. Let's start with what we like, because it'll only take about 30 seconds to get through.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Lasko, the special team of the running back from the Saints, was well enough to jump on their team plane and go home with the Saints. That was scary in the second quarter. He delivered a big hit on Brandon Tate on covering a kick, and it was referred to as a spinal injury, which gets your attention, obviously. He went off a long time on the field and went off in an ambulance, went to a nearby hospital. But they took care of him, and I like that. I like the fact that he went home with the Saints after that scary injury yesterday.
Yeah, it's tough for anyone watching, you know, to see something like that. I've unfortunately been around it on many occasions, you know, and the one that truly sticks out in my mind, I was in junior college, and we were playing down at Hudson Valley,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's down by Albany, maybe?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, I think it's down there somewhere. And so we're playing down there, and my younger cousin was on the team, and he played corner, and he caught an interception and was like tiptoeing the sideline, and one of their players, their wide receiver, he made a tackle, and it was a big hit, big collision, and they both fell backwards. And, you know, the other team's sideline was going crazy, like, oh, he just smacked them and all of this stuff. And we were upset. I automatically saw what happened. They both fell backwards. Now, my cousin had a concussion, which is horrible, but he got up. Their receiver broke his neck, and he never got up, you know, and it was tough to watch. And so when anytime I see something like that, it's like it just takes me back to that picture, you know, and I never want to see someone get hurt like that or, you know, paralyzed. So many bad things can happen in that situation. So it was good to see him actually be able to move everything and you know, fly home with the team.
And I've been checking all morning for an update. I haven't seen anything coming out of New Orleans since late last night. And the latest word, Daniel Lasko flew back to New Orleans with the Saints. He has full motion in all of his extremities. Further evaluation today. So once that evaluation takes place, we'll probably get an update from New Orleans. The other thing I liked, and it was pregame, so does it count? But it was pretty cool. The salute to service engineered by the Bills before kickoff yesterday. And when they announce the five branches of the service and they march out there with the theme song for each branch of the service, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty cool. And it didn't go long. You know, they had a full flag national anthem. But just seeing the five branches of the service come out there, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard, to their theme song. It was pretty cool. You know, they're all dressed up in their dress uniforms. It's a really nice ceremony.
I can only imagine how nice that was to see. You know, I wasn't there, and they didn't show it on the TV broadcast, so I couldn't see all of that stuff happen. But I can only imagine how nice it was to see. And once again, I go back to junior college, and I remember playing against the Navy and the Army and watching them do this whole routine and listening to their, you know, their fight songs and things like that. It was fun to see, and it was fun to watch. You know, we're just some JUCO, and we're down at Navy in Rhode Island. Like, man, this is pretty cool. So I'm sure that was a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, and the flyover too. I forgot the helicopter flyover.
Yeah. Were they loud?
Yeah. Nothing like the sound of those rotors chopping the wind.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. That's what we like. That's where it ends for me.
I don't have anything else for you.
There's nothing else I liked the rest of the afternoon. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll get into what we didn't like. That list is considerably longer, plus we'll get more of your phone calls when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Play action fake, rolls right, fires short, and is caught by the tight end. It is dropped, the ball pops out, and the Bills may have it at the 10. A big scramble there at the 10-yard line. It is Buffalo ball, Kyle Williams at the bottom of the pile with the football.
Kyle Williams recovers that fumble forced by Ramon Humber. The Advanced Alarm defensive play of the game. Advanced Alarm providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. All right. Sean McDermott coming up at the top of the hour. So let's dive into what we did not like, Donald. Can I go first?
Yes.
I didn't like the poor tackling, and it's two games now. I'm repeating what I said in the first half hour, but, you know, we were praising them for being such a good tackling unit on defense in the first four or five games this year. That's all falling apart. I don't understand it. You made a good point last week about did they get so, you know, enamored of the takeaways that they start reaching for the ball? Maybe that's it. I don't know what it is, but that has got to be fixed. First and foremost, you have to tackle better. And right off the bat yesterday, you know, right off the first drive of the game for the Saints, they were just missing tackles and whiffing. That's what I didn't like.
I'm telling you, you have to be able to tackle in this league because people in offense, running backs, wide receivers, even quarterbacks these days are too good. They have too much balance. They can bounce off of you. And if you just want to make a big hit and think that they're going to go down, no, I'm going to continue to keep moving forward. I'm going to bounce off you, and I'm going to move forward. Guys are too good. If you're not form tackling, wrapping up, you know, I understand we want turnovers. We need that. But if you're trying to get turnovers and missing the tackles, and then the running back goes for another 8 or 9 yards and a first down every time he runs the ball, what do we have? We have nothing. You know, make the tackle. And if you make the form tackle and you hold them up for a second, then somebody else can come in and strip that ball out. But, you know, the first person in, do your job and get the guy to the ground.
Yeah. There's nothing I didn't like. And this plays into that part of it. The Bills' defensive line is not playing well now for a couple of games, Donald. I found myself watching the game over on video this morning. I found myself going back to my roster and saying, who are these Saints offensive linemen?
Yeah.
Because they were dominant up front against the Bills' defensive line.
It's 2 weeks in a row now where they've just been totally overmatched. And we talk about it. I don't think, you know, Marcell Dareus wasn't playing that much when he was here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the deal is now, but the defensive line, the linebackers, these guys are not getting off blocks at all, you know, and they're not stopping the run up the middle. They're not stopping the run to the outside. Like, they can't stop the run at all right now. And it's like I said earlier, it's one thing to get beat by a team when they're passing the ball and they make great plays down the field. It's a total different ball game when a team scores 6 rushing touchdowns against you, a bunch of big plays all day. That is like, that's not good at all. That's like just like slow death. Like, oh, man, it's just like poof, poof. And you just keep taking punches the entire fight, hoping that, you know, the ref calls the fight. And, you know, that's what that is like. You got to be able to stop the run.
And they can't. They didn't. What else did we not like? I got another thing for you. I think the run game the Bills on offense is just gone away. And, you know, they started out great against the Jets in the opener, fell off a little bit, came back a little bit, and fell off again. And, you know, the second Jets game was bad. You could clearly see the offensive line outplayed. This game yesterday, the game got away. So they couldn't run as often as they would like. But still, they're not getting consistent, solid production from the backs. I am in the camp of the folks who think that Mike Tolbert is not the answer, is the backup to LeSean McCoy. I don't know who the answer is. But they've got to run the ball better. That's kind of what this foundation of this team is.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp as you and the whole Mike Tolbert thing. I think you can use him in certain situations. But I don't know if he is the answer for – the backup running back. You know, I think you need somebody else. Now, I hope that they put Tavarius Cadet in.
Yeah,
give him
give a shot.
You know, he's a guy who can run up the middle. He's a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. Give him a shot, you know, and maybe he can bring a good compliment to LeSean McCoy. But nobody's getting it done. And that starts with the offensive line. This offensive line is not moving anybody off the ball. The defenses are playing in the Bills' backfield. And then you have, you know, certain play calls, even with the Tolbert, you know, like the option tosses to the outside and things like that, where I don't know if he has the speed to get out there and make that happen, you know. He got stuffed on a 4th-and-1, you know, by Manti Te'o. And, you know, these are things that they have to get corrected. If you can't run the ball, you can't do anything.
We've just scratched the surface of what we didn't like about that game, which shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. We're going to hear what the head coach saw from yesterday's game. Sean McDermott coming up. He will meet with the media in a moment. We'll carry that news conference live, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
From One Bills Drive, the Buffalo Bills back at work today after yesterday's loss to the New Orleans Saints. A terrible day for the defense overall in the game. The Bills surrendered 298 yards on the ground. That came a week after they gave up 194 yards on the ground against the New York Jets. The Saints had a 10-play, 94-yard scoring drive in the third quarter, all of them on the ground in 10 consecutive runs. So the Bills lose the game. They lose their unbeaten streak at home, their first loss at home after starting 4-0 at home, and they hit the road for their next two, including a game coming up this Sunday at Los Angeles against the Chargers. Bills head coach Sean McDermott's going to step before the microphones in just a moment for his Monday news conference. We will carry it live here on the show. The Denver Broncos looking to regroup. They suffered another rough loss yesterday, a 41-16 rout at the Broncos' loss at home to the New England Patriots. A lot of special teams problems for the Denver Broncos in that game. And now the Broncos with a sixth consecutive loss, their record now 3-6. New York Giants in even worse straits. The Giants hit rock bottom yesterday with a 31-21 loss to the previously winless San Francisco 49ers. The Giants are now 1-8. Giants coach Ben McAdoo says he is not worried at all about his job security. Says it's not thinking about that at all. Minnesota Vikings backup quarterback Teddy Bridgewater says he was overcome with emotion as he was back on the sideline yesterday after 14 and a half months of rehab. Bridgewater active Sunday for the first time in 672 days. Monday Night Football tonight, the Miami Dolphins in Carolina. The Dolphins now 4-4. Miami coming off their 27-24 loss against Oakland in their last outing. The Panthers are rolling now. Their record 6-3. They beat Atlanta last week by a score of 20-17. 8:30 kickoff at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. The Dolphins and Carolina on Monday Night Football. And the Buffalo Sabres hit the road for their next game. They play in Pittsburgh tomorrow night. 7 o'clock faceoff. That'll kick off a 3-game and 5-night stretch. That includes a game in Detroit Friday and a home game against Carolina on Saturday. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones recapping and rehashing and reliving yesterday's loss. The Saints beat down to the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott here to talk about it. He is at the podium now across the way in the media room. Let's listen into his Monday news conference.
How's your mood today after watching the tape? My mood, is disappointed. I'm disappointed, but I'm upbeat, because I know we're building and I know that we didn't play up to the standard we've played at before, and we've coached that before. So for that reason, I'm upbeat and I'm looking forward to getting back to work.
Following the Jets game, even after that one, you said there were some positive things to take from it. After watching the film from this one, you're a pretty optimistic person, generally speaking. Was there anything positive to take from yesterday?
There's always positives, There is. Harder to find yesterday, for sure, Josh. But you have to find things that we did do well in order to build on those things, whatever you do. And that's just true in teaching. But we got to go back and reteach. And obviously a lot of it wasn't up to our standard, no doubt about it. And so we have to go back and you reteach it and you own it and you embrace the work that you've got to put in to get it back to where it needs to be.
After the last 2 weeks, what do you do to make sure you don't lose the locker room down the stretch here?
Well, we're 5-4. Big picture perspective at this point says we're in the playoff hunt. So I don't see that. I'm not concerned about that at all. I believe in the men in that locker room, and I'm excited about where we're going. This is our first year together, so you have to keep things in perspective. Like I said earlier, we build on what we did well and we correct what we didn't do well. This is the growing pains you go through when you come in and you try and get things going the right way. Like I told you before, I knew it wasn't going to be easy in the first year. Right now we had two games back-to-back that wasn't up to our standard, and sometimes that happens as you're going through this process. There's pain in the process also, and that doesn't make it easy. It just means you got to work through it.
Sean, how do you go about addressing and quickly addressing what's been going wrong with your rush defense and the fact that both teams, your last two opponents, have essentially plowed for you?
Right, you got to look at it and say, number one, you got to own what we did do well and what we didn't do well, and a lot of it we didn't do well. And that starts with gap integrity and fundamentals and technique in taking on blocks and staying in our gaps. And, that's where we have to improve.
Hey, Sean,
there just seems to be a perception that the problems kind of started cropping up ever since you traded Marcel. Is Mark not having his presence? I know he played open 2 days later, but is not having his presence there in the middle causing issues?
No. We've played good run defense even when Marcel was in the building, but not on the field. We've played good run defense, and I expect us to do that going forward.
You covered it.
Sean, has it been more of a breakdown fundamentally or effort-wise with these past two games that has caused so many issues on both sides of the ball?
It was an effort. It really wasn't. I mean, the guys have prepared all the week, all week long, and prepared last week like they have in other weeks, and probably even more prepared than in other weeks. And on the field, the effort was there. It's fundamentals and technique. Now, did we get worn down? We did, and that's what happens when you can't stop the run early in the game. You get worn down over time, over three or four quarters of the run that continues to hit on you. That's what happens in this game, and we've done that to teams on the other side of the ball. So that's a wearing down effect throughout the game. But effort was there for the most part. But fundamentals and technique weren't where they needed to be.
So is it easier to make a change and fix things when it's fundamentals or as opposed to effort?
Well, good question. I'm of the belief that it's easier to change things when it's fundamentals and technique. Now, that's not easy either because that takes work. Whatever you do, usually in life, right, takes work. And in this case, no different.
Hey, Sean, I guess you probably expected it was going to happen as soon as you put Nathan in the game yesterday, but do you sort of scoff at, fans screaming to play Nathan right now when you're 5-4 and in the playoff race?
Well, I understand where they're coming from on that. Nathan's, he's a good player. I like what he did yesterday. I think that he did some good things in the game yesterday. So, I know where they're coming from on that. From a fan standpoint.
What do you make of the offense? And a lot of people are talking about the run defense, but the offense not being able to get, do anything after getting that, that field goal drive.
Yeah, I thought we came out the first drive and we were into a rhythm and did some good things early there. And then after that, we struggled. We were challenged and we could have done some better things. Obviously, putting points on the board. And so, when you play a team like the Saints, who are going to score points, that's been their MO for years. You've got to score points on the other side of the ball. You have to possess the ball in order to keep their offense, their high-powered offense, off the field. We didn't do a good enough job of that, obviously.
You said that you understand where fans are coming from who want to see Nathan Peterman, but you said yesterday that Tyrod remains your starter. So if you understand where they're coming from, why wouldn't you make that change?
Well, because I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter. That's what I said yesterday. I know what Tyrod's done, and I also know what Nate's done. So Tyrod's our starter.
What do you need to see from Tyrod against the Chargers that you didn't see yesterday?
Well, I just think the overall team, we need to do a lot better job of fundamentals and techniques. And that's true of every position, whether it's the quarterback position, up front, back end, on the defensive side. We need to do a better job with our fundamentals and techniques, and then the execution overall needs to get better.
Hey, Sean, I've asked this question many times, and of coaches before you who had Tyrod. It just always has seemed like his primary, if you want to call it a weakness, is that he does not throw when a receiver is covered. He prefers to have the guy open. Kelvin Benjamin is a guy who needs the ball thrown to him, whether he's covered or not. Is this something you've impressed on Tyrod that he's got to learn to do that, or are you satisfied with him checking down to guys?
Well, there's times when you have to check the ball down. That's either where the reads take you or or the smart play. And then there's other times when this is a league of contested balls. You know, that's how this league works. And so there's a give and take there, as we all know. I've seen Tyrod grow. I've seen Tyrod do some things better this year than he did last year, and that's part of his growth process as well as our team's growth process also.
With so many of those short passes to running backs seemingly in the game plan, what was the reasoning for Travaris Cadet not being active for the game?
Well, it's a numbers thing more than anything. When you look at it, Matt, it's Charles Clay coming back off of an injury. We want to make sure we have enough depth there to support his situation, and that just, you know, happens to have a trickle down effect sometimes through the roster.
Coach, where are we with Cordy and EJ this week? Any better?
Day to day. Both are day to day, right?
Any update on Jerry Hughes?
Day to day, also. Yeah, we've got a bunch of those guys that are day to day.
As a first year head coach, when the script gets flipped kind of this drastically, and you come across this kind of adversity after two games like this, what are you learning about yourself, the way you need to handle something like this with this locker room?
Well, you learn a lot about yourself, just yourself going through experiences. You know, this is, my first time going through as a head coach, as you mentioned. That said, it doesn't change my approach in terms of I've been through this before. This is sometimes the nature of the league. Sometimes as you're building, you go through growing pains, and you go back and you reteach. And so I pull from what I've experienced over my career in the NFL and been on some really good teams. And I'm confident in this team the same way. And so you go back, you reteach, and you reexamine what you're doing, making sure it's the right thing. And that said, I know a lot of what we're doing is good, and you don't lose sight of that. This is a 5-4 football team, and a lot of hard work's been put into it so far, and we've done a lot of good things. Obviously, the last 2 weeks have not been up to the standard that we've instilled that from the day we've come in here, and no one's happy about that, and so I take responsibility for that. So I have confidence in the staff and these football players, and that we'll continue to work, and that's the only way you fix it is you work. You put your head down and you work, and you get better.
Sean, do you anticipate all three of Andre Holmes, Ryan Davis, and Vlad Dukas being on the roster throughout the week this week?
Vlad Dukas,
Ryan Davis, and Andre Holmes.
Yeah, I don't see why not at this point. I mean, I believe in all three of those guys. You know, yeah. I don't know where does that come
from.
Yeah, yeah.
How much do you have to? Because you talked about being 5-4, and how much do you have to stress that to this team, to your players, to your coaches, to the building, that this team still is 5-4, even though it seems, after two dreadful losses, that it seems worse?
Well, you always have to keep big picture perspective, and keep our obviously one eye on what we're doing, what's in front of us, and once in a while keep an eye on the future in terms of the vision for this football team. Because we take what happened yesterday seriously, and you have to learn from it, but not get too far down on yourselves and lose confidence in what you're doing. The five wins didn't happen by mistake. Obviously, the last couple games, we haven't played our best football. But that tends to happen. When you look around the league, it tends to happen. And again, it's can you hang together? Can you handle the downturns and manage the downturns that come up once in a while through a season, and get the thing going back in the right direction, making sure we're learning from the mistakes, making sure we're learning from the lessons that we have incurred the last couple of weeks.
What gives you confidence that Mike Tolbert can produce for you in that number two role at running back? His production the last two games in particular has been minimal.
Well, I've been around Mike for a number of years in Carolina. I know what he brings to the table. I know what he's done this year at times, and so I'm from that, I'm extremely confident in Mike Tolbert.
Prior to the season, you put together a leadership council. When the team goes through what it's gone through the last 2 weeks, do you meet with those guys a little more frequently? Do you make sure that they kind of have the pulse of the locker room through those guys?
Right, Josh. That's part of the reason behind the leadership council is so that I know the pulse of the locker room and keep the lines of communication open. As a head coach, you're around every player But you don't have a chance to be around every player as long as you want to be, just because of the scope of the job. So that gives me a feel that represents all parts of the locker room, every position, and you know, they've been a big asset to me so far.
Do you talk to them even more right in the last 2 weeks?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. We try to in terms of the communication. That's, you know, for me to lock myself into my office and try and figure it out all on my own, certainly that's one approach, but in this case, that's not the right approach. And the communication, the listening, and then also my communication to the team of what our standard is and what's acceptable in terms of up to our standard and then what wasn't up to our standard.
Did any of them speak out immediately after the game, like get it right out of the way immediately after the game yesterday?
In terms of?
Getting their message out about moving forward.
You know, not necessarily. I just think it's an overall team approach at this point is to look at the film and you learn from it. And these guys are grown men. They learn from things and they've been through it before. In terms of, you know, when you play sports all your lives, you go through some of these moments. And that happens. No one likes it. I don't like it. But you got to own it. You got to take responsibility for it, be accountable for it. And you grow from it. And I'm confident that as we build around here, that this will be, you know, part of the building and the foundation that we're building moving forward. That's one of strength and resiliency.
Lorenzo called it a whooping yesterday and talked about man to man. You know, just it's not a technique. It's somebody beating somebody man to man. How much of the pride comes into factor when you look at 300 yards rushing, especially from you as a defensive coach, obviously, coach, with your guys and knowing when they show up the building, it's not just technique and things like that. It's a pride factor too of seeing that number on the board and correcting it.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, you put in a lot of work to go out there and perform the way we did yesterday. That's not acceptable at all. Not acceptable.
Hey, Sean, is Zay also the day-to-day?
I'm sorry?
Zay Jones, is he also day-to-day?
Correct, yes.
Hey, Sean, have you considered with Rico and Juan tweaking the way you block the run game? This has been a team that was in the past good at man-on-man blocking, pulling Richie on the sweeps. The zone concept, I don't know if it's part of the problem for the run game. Have you thought about tweaking some of that?
Yeah, we look at it, Sal. Yeah, we do. I mean, we look at it every week is what are the best runs against the team we're playing? What are the best runs that utilize our strengths offensively, our weapons offensively? So we look at it every week, yeah.
Sean, after the game, Cameron Jordan said the Saints' plan was to make Tyrod be a quarterback. We've heard that, I don't know, three or four times from opposing players over the last couple of years. Do you worry that that sort of become a blueprint to shut him down is to keep him in the pocket and force him to throw?
Well, you look at, you know, over the years when you're on, when you put together a plan and you know, when you become a veteran player, plans get out there that, hey, just like a pitcher in baseball, you know, the first year a pitcher comes in you know, he hasn't been on tape. Some things happen, and then the longer you're on tape, you're going to have good days and bad days. And then naturally, when there's a bad day or you face adversity, people will say, well, is that going to be the blueprint? You know, that's a question for the future opponents. Certainly, we have to pay attention to that and learn from that also.
Why wasn't LeSean McCoy more involved yesterday?
Well, I think, honestly, I think the game got away from us earlier than we wanted it to, obviously, at all. But it got away from us from a point standpoint, and we had to, you know, really get into the passing game, the drop back passing game, earlier than we wanted to.
Sean, these two losses, is it, you know, you don't want to go 5-5 with an AFC opponent. Is it too early to use the word urgency or must win, or maybe game probably is, but does that take it to?
Right. I mean, I think you know, really, obviously, we understand the opponent this week, who the opponent is, and we'll get more into it as the day unfolds and the week unfolds. Every game is a big game because it's the next game, and that's the approach. We respect every opponent and put in the time that we need to do to put our best foot forward. So that will not change. That's been that way since week one.
In saying you had to get in the drop back passing game quicker than you wanted to or earlier than you wanted to, does it concern you that Tyrod went 1-for-5 in the second half before he got pulled? I mean, 1-for-5 is not a good number.
Right. I mean, look, you know, you look at it and you say, yeah, you have an identity as an offense. You know, you want to be able to hold your identity through an entire game, naturally, and that's more of what I was alluding to.
With it being your first West Coast
game. Did you give any thought to changing around practice time to get acclimated to the game being 3 hours later? And what was the end result? Why did you decide to keep it as it was?
Well, we've put a lot of time into research into the science behind the two-day trip, the one-day trip, the practices. And so this goes all the way back to the summer, really, Joe, of trying to get ahead of it and doing the proper research to put our players in a position to play and perform. All right. Thanks, guys.
Head coach Sean McDermott meeting with the media for about the last 19, 20 minutes or so, and we carried it for you live. And a lot of interesting stuff there. I love the fact that, Donald, I love the fact how McDermott, even in the face of a terrible loss yesterday and two straight losses, he's got his eye on the big picture, the long view. And, you know, and he said we got to reteach, which is fine. They got to reteach. They got to do that immediately. But he also has a perspective, step-back perspective, and said, you know, we're 5-4, still in the playoff hunt. He does have the long view here, and I think that's admirable about him. I mean, the easy response right now would be to throw everything out. Let's start over. Let's scrap our offensive game plan. Let's change our quarterback. That, I do believe that would be the easy response, not necessarily the best response to what went on yesterday.
I think to be a head coach or general manager in this league, you have to, or coordinator, you have to be able to just stay on an even keel. It doesn't matter if you play a great game against a great team or if you play a horrible game against a horrible team. You know, you still have to be able to stay on an even keel and figure out, you know, when is the best time to make a move from a certain player, you know, or scrap everything and let's just change our entire offense and now go no huddle or something like that. You have to be able to weigh the ups and downs of the seasons because every team goes through those ups and downs of the seasons. The best teams, the best coaches are the ones that can come out on the other side of that thing and just get better, you know. And so the only way that you get better is by staying on an even keel, never getting too high, never getting too low.
And McDermott said it, you know, we're 5-4. Those five wins, they count. That was real. That happened. And that, I think, adds to the perspective that you really need on a day like this after a game like that. Our Twitter poll deals with how to get better, though, how to fix what's going on. And on Twitter, we're asking respondents, what's the first thing you'd fix to get the Bills back on track? Not the only thing, because we all know there's a lot of bad going on yesterday, but what would be the first thing, if you had the power, what would be the first thing you'd fix to get the Bills back on track? On Twitter, 51% of you, we got about 1,400 votes in, 51% of you say you'd fix the run defense. 38% of you say you would fix the quarterback. 8% say you'd fix the Bills' anemic rushing offense. 3% say you'd do something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. What's the first thing you would fix? A couple of tweets on this. Chris Camo says, quarterback play is a flat-out joke. Ronnie Eastham tweets in, well, as long as Tyrod Taylor is starting, I won't be watching games anymore. It sounds a little extreme, doesn't it? We'll see. And as far as the quarterback change, Sean McDermott said this, I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter, so that change is not coming this week. We had a chance to be there in the locker room yesterday when Nathan Peterman was meeting with the media, asked about his stint, and he started out talking about how difficult it was to be on the sidelines when the Bills were faltering so badly on the offensive side of the ball. Here's what Nathan Peterman said in the locker room yesterday.
I mean, I think everybody on the sidelines, our whole team, is rooting for us to win, obviously. So, it's definitely tough. We put a lot of work in throughout the week, all of us do, to ensure victory. And, got to get better next week.
Do you find yourself conflicted at all when the score gets out of hand? You have to start thinking about you might be going in.
I mean, I kind of always think I'm going in just because that's my job, you know, whether, you know, it's an injury, which I hope never happens. But, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's my job to be ready.
You found Kelvin a couple times, obviously, on some passes late. How much have you personally worked with him kind of as a team, not just an individual work in practice?
How much has, like, as a team?
You lining up at quarterback and him playing wide receiver, you know, because you found him a couple times.
Never. I mean, I think we did a little bit in the off season, but I might have thrown one or two routes to him this week.
This is a little bittersweet. I mean, obviously, you guys are down huge, but you get your first career touchdown pass. I mean, is that something that you'll be able to look back on and kind of take a little pride in?
Sure, yeah, it's a milestone for sure, but ultimately, it's a team game, you know, and didn't get it done today, and you know, we got to go back and get a lot better.
There are fans that
every week, maybe not as much as when you were 5-2, but now after a couple of lopsided losses that are calling for you, that you know, you always hear that the backup quarterback is the most popular guy in town. Do you hear any of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, you said it right there, the backup quarterback. I know that just comes with the position, you know. And, you know, it's a lot more than just the one guy, though. I will say that, you know, from when I've been the starter in college and things like that, you know, it's always a team game. So I'm here to do my job, whatever the coaches tell me to do, and just support the starter as much as I can.
Nathan Peterman in the locker room yesterday, and here it comes, Donald. Like, there's blood in the water. There's nothing that gets people more excited, like casual fans talk, including, than quarterback controversy talk.
Oh, yeah.
And I get it. Tyrod didn't play well yesterday. I think he had about 2.5, 3 games before that where he was playing pretty well. And I think he still, this week, Tyrod Taylor gives them the best chance to win. But we'll keep an eye on that. I understand why people might feel that way. But, man, it's amazing how quarterback talk just – it's like a wildfire that you can't put out.
Yeah, you know, and my biggest thing with Tyrod is because I do think teams have a blueprint on him. Coach McDermott just talked about it. It's like a pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, they understand what you're trying to do, and they do what they have to do to shut that down, you know. So as a player, now you have to adjust, and you have to do things that might make you a little bit uncomfortable, you know, and that's kind of in life, right? You got to do some things sometimes that make you uncomfortable to get to where you want to get. But he's going to have to do some things that might make him uncomfortable, which is pull the trigger and throw the ball into some tighter windows. You know, he's going to have to do that because teams are going to sit back in his zone and they're going to force him to throw the ball. Throw the ball in his zone. Let's see if you can beat it, you know. And until he does that, it's going to be tough for this offense.
Cameron Jordan said it yesterday. It's been echoed in the past. You know, we want him to beat us. We want to make him into quarterback.
Right.
See if he can beat us. Sometimes he can. Sometimes he can't.
They don't. As a defensive lineman, they don't want to have to rush Tyrod Taylor and he make them look bad.
Yeah.
And they end up on his highlight film. You know, they don't. You don't want that. All right, I rush him and I got there and all of a sudden I'm diving at air because he just made some sick spin move or something like that. And he's, you know, 20, 30 yards down the field.
Right.
I'd rather just go ahead and rush him a certain way so that he has to sit in the pocket and pass the ball,
yep.
You know. And if that works for our team today, I'll get my sacks next week against a stationary quarterback. But right now against this dude, let's go ahead and force him to be a quarterback.
Let's work in a couple of calls here from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Eric is on the line with us. Hi, Eric. Go ahead. Hello, Eric in Tulsa. Are you there, Eric? I think we have lost Eric. Sorry about that, Eric. Call back. How about Marty in East Aurora? Marty, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, John.
You don't sound too happy, Marty.
Well, you know, I've been watching the Bills since they've been down at the rock pile, and I think the people are just getting a little tired. They think of the same old, same old. And, you know, I love Tyrod, okay? I think he's a great person. I truly think that he has a hard time seeing downfield. It just seems like he takes a little too long. I don't know if it's just, I don't know if he sees, if his lanes aren't open. I don't mean to change midstream, but you know what? You're not changing midstream if you try the other quarterback.
Sure,
I mean, let him get, Tyrod's a little short. You know, I think he has a hard time seeing downfield, and it seems like he takes too long to deliver the pass.
Yeah, and Marty, with all due respect, you're not breaking a whole lot of new ground here, right? We've talked about this, and we've seen Tyrod Taylor. We know he's late on throws. We know he's not extremely accurate. We know that he misses open receivers downfield. As I said, you're not breaking a whole lot of new ground here. He's got 38 starts in the NFL. We know who Tyrod Taylor is. We know his strengths and his weaknesses. I think, and this is what strikes me about his play yesterday, you know his inconsistencies as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And the calculation that the Bills are going to have to make, maybe this year during the course of the season, certainly in the offseason, is how much, you know, what's the ceiling and how much can we live with his inconsistencies? He is capable of big plays, big games. He can make plays on the run. Can we live with the downs as well as the highs with Tyrod Taylor? We'll see. You heard Sean. There's no doubt where Sean McDermott's head is at. I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter. Direct quote. 10 minutes ago. So there's no doubt where he's thinking right now. That's not a blanket season-long endorsement of Tyrod Taylor either. We'll see where it goes.
Right. You got to see where it goes. You know, and Tyrod Taylor didn't play well yesterday. He does have to get better. We understand that. But where do you go if you put in Nathan Peterman? We've been saying this all year. You put in Nathan Peterman and he doesn't do any better, then what? Do you go back to Tyrod Taylor? Now we're in a situation they're out in Cleveland where they're just switching quarterbacks back and forth, right, back and forth.
And no, you don't do it when you're in, when you're starved for a playoff appearance and you're in a playoff spot if the season ended today. Now, the way they're playing, that's not sustainable. They won't be in position for a playoff spot if they play the way they have the last couple of games.
Right.
But now is not the time, I believe. And I understand that people feel this way. Now is not the time to make that switch. We'll
and
see where we are in a month.
That's how coaches think, too. Yeah. That's how coaches think as well, you know. And they know – look, players understand who the better guy is right now for them to make a run, all right, and quarterback is so important. They understand who, all right, Tyrod is our best bet to make a playoff run. They get that. If a coach comes in and changes that, it sends a message throughout the locker room that's like, what are we trying to do right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we trying to make it to the playoffs, or are you already packing it in and trying to figure out what's going on for next year, and if you need to draft a quarterback or if Nathan Peterman is the guy, it just doesn't send a good message. And like I said, if you put him in and Nathan Peterman doesn't do well, do you then try to go back to Tyrod Taylor? It won't work.
No.
It just won't work out that way. So right now you're sitting in a playoff spot. You got to stick with Tyrod Taylor, and everybody out there just needs to hope that Tyrod Taylor plays better, you know, and that he pulls the trigger, that he gets the ball to Kelvin Benjamin, that he gets the ball to Charles Clay, Jordan Matthews, Zay Jones when he comes back. He has to play better right now. Nathan Peterman is not coming in right now. And I wouldn't expect it until the Bills are, like, out of the playoffs, like mathematically out of the playoffs.
I see. We'll see where it plays out. McDermott also talked about a brief injury update. Not much new there. Jerry Hughes left the game, didn't come back in the second half with a shin injury. He's going to be day-to-day. Cordy Glenn, who did not play yesterday with foot and ankle issues, he's going to be day-to-day. Zay Jones, wide receiver, E.J. Gaines, cornerback, both of them day-to-day. Neither of them played yesterday as well. All right, when we come back, more about this game, more of your thoughts about this game. What would be your first fix to get the Buffalo Bills back on track? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Third and one, the snap, and they pitch it to Shady. Left side, he's got room at the 40. Shady across midfield at the Saints 40, at the Saints 35, and finally brought down in New Orleans territory at the Saints 30-yard line. A 36-yard run over the left side on the pitch to LeSean McCoy. The Hilbert call of the game at Hilbert College. The community, the feeling, the values are different. See Hilbert College, see differently. Go to hilbert.edu/See different. Donald, that play, it was really the only play the Bills made, the 36-yard run by McCoy on the opening drive. But at the end of the play, the Saints defensive back clearly, I believe, twisted his ankle around. Shady came out. He was kind of paying attention to his ankle, talking to some doctors. I'm sure, you know, he's not on the injury list. They're not talking about him as injured. But I do believe something happened there that slowed him down, like a little ankle tweak. And you saw the play. Could you see it?
Yeah, I could see the guy still holding his ankle. I couldn't tell if he was twisting. I can tell he was still holding his ankle, though, you know. And that does happen. They talk about it all the time. When you're running the ball, there are times where you'll – like a guy is still holding – like he'll tackle you and he's still holding your ankle and you're like, get off me, at the bottom of piles. Like things happen at the bottom of piles, you know, eye gouging. All types of stuff happens throughout the course of a game. He got up to me and I couldn't tell if his ankle was hurting because he didn't seem to be limping. I couldn't tell if his ankle was hurting or if he fell hard and he was out of breath or what was going on in that play. But he wasn't the same player after that.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't using him the same way after that. And that was something that I was trying to pay attention to. Is he hurt? Is he not hurt?
Right.
He came back in. He didn't seem to be limping at all.
No,
now,
you're right.
I did see him make a cut one time that didn't look like LeSean McCoy. He kind of did like choppy steps. And I've never seen him do things like that. So I don't know if his ankle was hurting or was hurting or not.
Yeah, I agree. And there were a couple times when he just sort of slid, you know, as he was about to get tackled and didn't make the sharp cuts that you referred to there.
Right.
I did see that. Anyway, it wasn't very productive on the air or on the ground. Sean McDermott meeting the media a couple of moments ago. There's one thing he said that I wanted to replay a little bit, and it deals with again, big picture perspective, where they are now, they're 5-4. They are the sixth seed as it stands right now. They are clearly playing extremely poorly based on yesterday in the game against the Jets. But McDermott, I thought, shed some light on his thinking, at least, his perspective, and probably his message to his players when he talked about the Bills' position where they are right now. Let's listen in.
Well, you always have to keep big picture perspective and keep our obviously one eye on what we're doing, what's in front of us, and once in a while keep an eye on the future in terms of the vision for this football team. Because, yeah, we take what happened yesterday seriously, and you can't get – you have to learn from it but not get too far down on yourselves and lose confidence in what you're doing. The five wins didn't happen by mistake. Obviously, the last couple games, we haven't played our best football. And so – but that tends to happen. When you look around the league, it tends to happen. And again, it's can you hang together? Can you handle the downturns and manage the downturns that come up once in a while through a season – and get the thing going back in the right direction, making sure we're learning from the mistakes, making sure we're learning from the lessons that we have incurred the last couple of weeks.
Sean McDermott, earlier this hour, the Bills head coach, he's right about that, really, in terms of perspective. The five wins were not mistakes, number one. Number two, this does happen around the league. What do you think they were saying in New Orleans after they went to 0-2 to start the season? Loss against Minnesota and a loss against the Patriots. You think it all was lost? Now, they won seven in a row since then. But not saying that that'll happen here, but, as Sean said, you do have to acknowledge that this kind of poor play does happen around the league, and you try to shut it down as quickly as you can and press forward. Will they do that? We'll find out.
The NFL season is a long season. Even though for us it seems like it flies by, it does fly by.
Today it doesn't seem like it's flying.
Well, no, not today. But the season does fly by, but it is technically a long season. And there are a lot of ups and downs. There are a lot of different things that you deal with, injuries, losses like you had yesterday, you know, where you just you're looking at it and you can't even figure out, like, where do we start? You know, do we start at the offensive line? Do we start at – and when you have so many things as a coach and you're looking at it and there's so many things that went wrong in a game, what, are you going to replace the entire team? You know, you got to stay an even keel and just – try to figure things out together as a team. And when you're inside that locker room, inside those meeting rooms, you can't listen to anything that's being said outside the building. You know, you can't listen to the Nathan Peterman talk. You can't listen to, because if that starts to creep up in their minds as players, and you start to talk about that amongst each other, now you have a divide within the team, you know, where it's like, all right, okay, we need to go with Nathan Peterman because he's better than Tyrod Taylor. And you have half the team saying that, you know, and you have to everybody on that team has to be on one page. We didn't play well. We have to get this corrected. We know who our guys are. We know what we can do and what we're doing wrong. We need to just stay together as a team, go out to Los Angeles this week and play better.
Here's a call from Charlie. Charlie has some thoughts on this. Charlie, go ahead.
Chocolate Factory.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I just wanted to make a remark. There's in Orchard Park, One Bills Drive, there's a black cloud down there now, the way we've been playing. And the word I'm trying to say, I think, is very important that McDermott talked about earlier in the year in preseason is accountability with everybody in this football program. I honestly think, you know, we got three home games left, and we got to use them to our advantage. And I think if we win four or five games, we got a chance of being in the playoff. But I honestly think it has a lot to do with accountability. And I wanted to ask Donald a question, too, because he was a former player. Is this the time of the year where the players need to be in the locker room, lock the door, everybody talk about what's going on wrong and try to get it out of our systems and look back and hold everybody accountable? And I think we have a chance of winning some games if they can take that attitude. I'd just like to ask your opinions about that. Then I'll hang up.
Is this the time of the year? Yeah. I said it earlier in the show. You need to – I don't care if you got to come together in the meeting room just as a team. No coaches. We got to get this thing corrected, all right? We need everybody in this locker room right now. Look at yourself in the mirror. And did you do what you needed to do for this team to win on a consistent basis every play yesterday? Were you doing what you needed to do? The coaching staff upstairs, look, they're going to call the plays that they're going to call on offense and defense. It's our job to make those plays. It's our job to tackle. It's our job to block. It's our job to run the ball, throw the ball, catch the ball. Look at yourself in the mirror. And that's what they have to go in and say. Look at yourself in the mirror. We're going to come together as a team and watch the film and get better together. But when you go home tonight, look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, did you do what you needed to do? I'm going to do the same thing. Did I do what I needed to do for this team to win yesterday? And more than likely, all of them are going to say no.
Yeah.
You know? And so because of that, we lost the game the way we lost the game at home in front of our own crowd. And that's not good. And so if they do that, then I expect them to come out next week on the road in a weird environment out in Los Angeles and win that game, which might even feel like a home game.
I was just going through. I have notes from the interviews that I did and was involved in the locker room yesterday post game about your point about looking yourself in the mirror. Micah Hyde. I mean, I got the quotes right in front of me. Micah Hyde says, "I have to play better." I mean, he doesn't even not even prompt it. You know, I can play better. I'm not into talking what anybody else can do. I can play better. I can help this defense out. Jordan Poyer, I got to play better. Sean McDermott, I've got to coach better. So that focus that you talk about is still there as of yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, it's still there. Tyrod Taylor, I have to learn from this one. Definitely can play better overall. I mean, to a man, I'm going through it, to a man, everybody says, I got to play better. There's no finger pointing going on, at least, as I said, as of 4:30 yesterday. They know that, right? They know that
they have to
play better.
They know. Each one of those guys in there, because you know as a player.
Preston Brown, I'm sorry to interrupt. I got to tackle better. They're all there saying the same thing.
Yeah, you know as a player. You know when I'm on the field, I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I missed that play. Like, you know it. And you know you're going to go back and watch it on film, and you're going to say, all right, this is the – like, when you're sitting in the film room today – and they're watching, and the play comes up, and they show, because you know exactly the time that it happened, everything, and they show it. They usually, when you're watching the coach's film, it shows you the time. You know, it's 8 minutes left in the first.
Clock and score.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so you're like, okay, here's the play right here.
Or maybe 2 minutes ahead. You know, it's coming. I know it's coming.
I know it's coming. It's coming up. You know the play that happened before it. You know the play that happened after it. Oh, here we go.
And then what do? You just
put your head down. Right, exactly. I just messed that. If you miss tackles, I just messed that one up. So, yeah, and on the field, you know it. And you know that you're going to have to go back and watch that film. So each one of those guys, I'm sure, thinking the same thing. I got to play better. I did not do what I needed to do to help this team win. And we know this team can play a lot better. It's not like, you know, they can't play like this. It's not like they haven't won a game yet and we're all looking at it like they can't do it.
Right.
They play well.
Those five wins matter. They meant something. How film room, film study today, reviewing, you know, game tape of yesterday. Does it happen often where a guy will stand right up and say, that's on me. I'm sorry, fellas. I missed that tackle. I missed that play. Or do you prefer to have somebody else call you out?
Usually don't stand up in the film room and say that one's on me. You know, you just chalk it up as what it is. We all can see that one is on you. We all can see that one is on me. None of us play well, you know, so it's not like everybody standing up. That's me, coach. You know, in basketball, you'll get a guy that fouled, they raise their hand. They don't do that now.
How about this? Does this happen where I imagine there is. This is kind of a stupid question, I guess, but there's dialogue where a guy will say, yeah, I did make that play, but I was confused because of this, or I didn't get this call, or I didn't understand why. Does that happen? Not sure.
Was there points in the game yesterday where the defense looked confused to you?
I didn't see that. I didn't notice
that.
Overmatched? Outplayed?
Definitely that. There were just like a couple of plays where I could see guys like pointing around, and it's so hard to tell if they're confused or if they're just communicating with each other.
I'll tell you what, and this needs to be said. We got to get to a break. Certainly the Bills played poorly. The New Orleans Saints offense is a machine, Donald. A machine. I'm talking about wholesale personnel substitutions on virtually every play, pretty much every play. Skill position people in and out on every play. I'm talking about Drew Brees having commanded the offense, going to the line of scrimmage, seeing what he sees, looking at the clock and checking off into something else. Yep. On a third of the plays, half of the plays.
Let me tell you
something. That's a machine they have on offense over there.
And that NFC, and people are talking about the Eagles being the best team. That Saints team, I'm telling you, with Drew Brees, because Drew Brees is an experienced Super Bowl winning quarterback, that is a different team. The defense is playing well. The offense with the quarterback, he's getting those guys the ball outside. The biggest change is a running game, though, a running game and a defense. And that whole team right now is working like a machine. Nobody wants to play them, not Atlanta, not Carolina. They don't want to go into that dome, especially, and have to play New Orleans right now.
Even in the best days of Brady and the Patriots offense, and there have been very many, I can't recall being as impressed with an offense as I was with New Orleans yesterday. Yes, the Bills' defense was awful. Put that aside for a second. I'm talking about switching personnel every play, getting the call in and out, getting in and out of the huddle, making adjustments, you know, with audibles at the line of scrimmage. Certainly Drew Brees is a great thrower. He's a great passer. But his command of that offense, maybe the best thing he provides that offense, is knowledge and command of the offense.
He knows their entire offense. All he has to do is figure out what the Bills are trying to do to them. And you hear it. Kill, 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 kill. Uh-oh. He just made an audible. He knows what they're doing. He sees what they're about to do. He checks it to something else. 12-yard gain. First down.
It was remarkable. And it's not to take away anything from how poorly the Buffalo defense played. All right, break here. We've got more coming up. Chris Brown's going to join us at the top of the hour, the 2 o'clock hour. And, of course, we'll get more phone calls from you. The John Murphy Show coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
With more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. Chris Brown going to join us at the top of the hour. See if we can squeeze in a phone call before that. It is Frederick from Los Angeles. Frederick's of Hollywood. Hello, how are you, Frederick? Hello,
hi, Frederick.
Patrick. I'm sorry?
It's Patrick.
Oh, my board says Frederick. Patrick. That's not quite as exciting as Frederick from Hollywood, but go ahead, Patrick.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I think the Bills have got to get back to what's working. I mean, obviously, you heard that McDermott in the interview today say that they had to get away from the game plan because the score got out of control. But that comes at a price of, you know, if we are doing unnatural things, those don't seem to be working. And to throw some more gasoline on the fire, I really liked what I saw from Peterman during the preseason. And I liked what he saw, out there the other night. I thought he really knows how to zing it. He looks like a throwback quarterback to, like, those 80s, 90s great quarterbacks that I grew up with. And I just want us to win in whatever it takes.
I agree. Me
so
too.
That's the point.
Okay. Donald, any thoughts on that?
I mean, I agree with wanting to win and do whatever it takes. I don't know if I agree with changing your quarterback right now.
No, I don't.
You need to be out of – basically, I like Peterman. I just don't think that's the answer. Right now, when you still sit in a playoff spot and Tyrod Taylor was the quarterback to get you to that point. I don't think that's the way that you do it right now.
And, again, quoting Sean Taylor from not even 45 minutes ago, Sean McDermott, I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter. It's not happening this week. And I'm reluctant to conduct an on-air referendum about Tyrod versus Peterman this week, but if that's the way the callers want to go, we can do that. It's not happening this week. Again, Sean McDermott. I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter.
You know, I just received this tweet.
So I have received a tweet.
I received a tweet, and around the NFL is saying that, this won't go down to my computer, but the running back, Daniel Lasco,
his
name?
Yes.
Suffering bulging discs that will end his season.
Oh, that's too bad.
From around the
Daniel
NFL.
Daniel Lasco, so that's the update on him, the guy who laid on the carpet for a long time.
This
went
is
off
per rap sheet.
Ian Rappaport.
Yep.
Bulging disc for Daniel Lasco. Good. Good update. We're going to take a break. Chris Brown's going to join us. Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. More of your phone calls when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. Sean McDermott addressed the media within the last hour or so and talked about the Bills' current situation. We're 5-4, he said, as he looked at big picture perspective, still in the playoff hunt. He talked about the coaching staff has to reteach some of the fundamentals they worked on. Quarterback controversy, McDermott says, quote, I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter. As far as the injury updates, Jerry Hughes, day-to-day with a shin injury, suffered in the first half yesterday. Cordy Glenn, also day-to-day. He missed last week with a foot and ankle injury. Also day-to-day, wide receiver Zay Jones and cornerback E.J. Gaines. The Bills hit the road for their next two, including a game out west, Los Angeles, against the Chargers coming up this Sunday. Denver Broncos in a bad way. The Broncos have lost 6 in a row. They're 3-6. The latest loss last night, a 41-16 rout at the hands of the New England Patriots. Special teams problems resulted in 24 points scored for New England in that game. Giants head coach Ben McAdoo says he is not worried at all about his job security. He says that has nothing to do with anything. The Giants hit rock bottom yesterday with a 31-21 loss to the previously winless San Francisco 49ers. The Giants now 1 win, 8 losses. Monday Night Football coming up tonight. The Miami Dolphins on the road to Carolina to play the Panthers. The Panthers 6-3, the Dolphins 4-4. Miami coming off a 27-24 loss to Oakland in their last game. Carolina beat Atlanta last week 20-17. And the Buffalo Sabres, back-to-back games over the weekend, Friday and Saturday. They lost them both, an overtime loss Saturday in Montreal. Dave Andrechuk and the class of 2017 will be introduced in the Hockey Hall of Fame tonight. Andrechuk played 12 seasons in Buffalo, the NHL's all-time leader in power play goals. Paul Kariya, Timo Solani, Mark Recchi, Daniel Goyette, Clark Drake, and Buffalo native Jeremy Jacobs, the other inductees tonight in Toronto for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Next up for the Sabres, a game in Pittsburgh tomorrow night to play the Penguins at 7 o'clock. 3 games in 5 nights coming up for the Buffalo Sabres. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, final hour of the show. We're going to talk a little bit later on this hour about a documentary coming up to public TV here in Buffalo on WNED-TV called Ralph, The Life and Times of Former Bills Owner and Bills Founder Ralph Wilson. We'll talk with Lynn Bader of WNED-TV coming up 2:30 today. But joining us in studio right now, familiar face, good to have him here because we need comfort and consolation on a day like this.
Oh, Chris, is that why I'm here?
Yes. Make us feel better, Chris.
I'm sorry Brown. I didn't bring my fluffy pillows for you either.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. Chris, that's a tough loss to talk about today, obviously. You've done it. You've written about it.
Sure.
Never gets any more fun, does it?
No, Mondays are more difficult. I'll give you that.
Yep.
But it's I think the most disturbing thing is in these last two games, a team that up until that Thursday night game had been in every game, win or lose, mm-hmm. did not even compete in any way, shape, or form these last two outings. And I think that's what has Bills fans and even some, you know, outside observers dumbfounded as to how a team that can play every week so tight, you know, with their opponents, suddenly be this far off the mark to such a great degree in all facets of their game, not just one particular area that's sinking the ship these last two outings. So I think that is, I think, what is most jarring or alarming about the performance the last 2 weeks.
What happened to the Bills' defense, Chris, the defense that gave up 13.5 points in the first four games? And obviously they had that long string of five games with 15 takeaways. In the last couple of weeks, they've been virtually awful. With the same personnel, I mean, I don't think E.J. Gaines makes that much of a difference, but
right.
What's gone wrong there?
Well, I think it's a collective combination of things. The pass rush has gone south. The run defense has disappeared. Technique in the defensive backfield has lapsed, where big plays are getting made on them. So I think all of those things, it's almost a confluence of events that have all gone in the wrong direction simultaneously, and I think that's how you explain the collapse that we've witnessed, because it's occurred on all levels. I think the biggest one, the most glaring one for me, is what's happening up front on both sides of the ball.
Correct.
People can talk about Tyrod Taylor till the cows come home today, and I get it. You know, an anemic performance in the passing game by him, a lack of willingness to take risk when a team was starving to make plays offensively. I get all of that. But I think even bigger than that is the play up front in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And Coach McDermott addressed it right after the game. It starts up front. And if we can't win there, everything else becomes infinitely more difficult. And I agree with him 100%. Both sides of the ball has flat out stunk the last 2 weeks for the Bills, in my opinion, up front.
Chris, we listened to the press conference. You were in the room, and the question was asked about Marcell Dareus. How do you feel his loss is affecting this defensive front?
I think it's minimal. And the reason I say that is because the guy played 6 games, probably averaged about 25 to 28 plays a game, and had 4 tackles in 6 games. Did he see most of the double teams when he was in the lineup? Yes. And that has an effect. I won't deny that. But this guy was not a game changer for them. He was not being a game changer. And, I think the only residual effect of his absence is now the double teams are going to Kyle Williams. And now Kyle Williams is being double teamed, or Jerry Hughes is being double teamed on passing downs. And there aren't enough other players up front that can be difference makers and win the majority of the one-on-ones. When Marcell Dareus is in there and he's taking double teams, now Kyle's one-on-one, he's a guy that's going to make a play for you. Jerry Hughes gets a one-on-one, there's a guy that can make a play for you. Now that those guys are seeing more of the double teams, someone else on that front has to step up. Shaq Lawson has to make a play.
Yeah.
Cedric Thornton has to make a play. Adolphus Washington has to make a play. And these are guys that now are in a new situation. Go make it happen.
Right.
To this point, they haven't.
Giving up close to 300 yards on the ground yesterday to the New Orleans Saints, and that was one of the things Sean McDermott talked about in his news conference an hour ago. What about that run defense? What does he think? Here was his response.
Right, you got to look at it and say, number one, you got to own what we did do well and what we didn't do well, and a lot of it we didn't do well. And that starts with gap integrity and fundamentals and technique in taking on blocks and staying in our gaps. And, that's where we have to improve.
There just seems to be a perception that the problems kind of started cropping up ever since you traded Marcell. Is not having his presence, I know he played Oakland 2 days later, but is not having his presence there in the middle causing issues?
No. We've played good run defense even when Marcell was in the building but not on the field. We've played good run defense, and I expect us to do that going forward.
John McDermott, and talking about what you said, Chris, and he makes a good point, too, the coach, about how Marcell was here and on the roster anyway when the and off the field, actually, on the roster, right? He missed a game or two when the defense was playing much better. So it's hard to link those two. I think you said it's minimal.
Yeah, and you look at where – but I think the fact still remains, separating from the Dareus argument, which I really don't think is one, the run defense was third in the league 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now it's 22nd. I mean, that's how far it's fallen that fast. But when you give up 300 yards rushing 1 week and 194 the other week, 500 yards against you in two games is going to bloat that average, heretofore unforeseen proportions. So I think what you've got is a problem that has to get fixed in short order. And the other thing that was so surprising about that was you look at the way the Saints were getting yards in chunks, and people talk about, having lighter guys on the field and not stopping the run. The Bills couldn't get out of their base personnel because it was first and 10, first down. I guess we're still in base. First and 10, first down. Second and one. Or, you know what I mean? Like, base personnel was on the field most of the day, and they still couldn't stop the run.
Donald and I ended last hour saying this, and it doesn't go down well for Bills fans who, want heads to roll. But you have to, if you're any way an impartial observer, you have to acknowledge just how finely tuned an offensive machine the New Orleans Saints are, and that was on full display yesterday. Doesn't excuse the way the Bills played. Doesn't excuse missed tackles or missed assignments. But you have to acknowledge that offense knows what it's doing, knows how to do it quickly, knows how to sub in personnel quickly, efficiently, with a great trigger man. But and then all the attributes Drew Brees brings to the game, I maintain his number one attribute is command of that offense.
Well, you might have the best quarterback and offensive play calling combo in the league in Sean Payton and Drew Brees. But I think it goes beyond that for them. I think this might be the best all-around team in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their defense is rapidly approaching top 10 status. I mean, they're number 8 in the league right now. I mean, they're one of the only teams in the league that's in the top 5 in scoring and points allowed. And it all comes down to points. And they have both working in spades right now. And even their special teams unit is pretty good. They got a good kicker. They got a Pro Bowl-level punter. They seem to have all the pieces in place right now. Their defense has come of age. When you invest 14 of your last 21 draft choices on the defensive side of the ball, which was their big sticking point, that was their stumbling block. Over the last 3 years, 14 draft choices out of 21 go to the defense, and now they're reaping the rewards of that. So, the offense hung on long enough. They're still a high-powered, high-octane offense, but the defense has come of age. It's made them a complete team. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is the NFC representative in the Super Bowl.
All right, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us in studio. We'll take a couple of calls from you. Drew calling from Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Drew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how y'all doing, John? How y'all doing today?
Great. We're all good. Thank you.
Yeah, I just was I understand that y'all talking about Tyron. You know, he should be, you know, he's not it's not about Tyron, or it goes up front with the offensive line and defensive line. I understand that. But at the same time, they can't block forever, man. Tyrod has to get that ball out. I didn't see him. I watched the game yesterday. I didn't see him look towards Benjamin not three times that whole game. Then as soon as Peterman comes in, first, as soon as he drops back, three-step drop back, he looks straight to Benjamin, gets him the ball. Looks over to Matthews, gets him the ball. Like, he got to distribute the rock in. I don't think they should change Tyrod right now. I would give him one more chance this weekend against this game coming up against the Chargers. If he has another outing like he did yesterday, then we got to sit him down, because, I mean, this is a perfect season right here where we can possibly end this drought, man. And I don't want to see McDermott then wait too long to make the quarterback change to where we're not even in the playoffs.
I get that. I get that. Thanks very much, Drew. And look, nobody has given Tyrod the lifetime guarantee they'll be the starter. Right. I do think the guarantee extends through the Sunday, though, Chris, at least. No? Yes? Donald,
yes.
Chris.
I think yes, so. Yes, I think week, so. Yeah. And I might even go beyond that.
Yeah.
I don't think we might not see Peterman unless this team goes 5-7.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think he's in there until you are mathematically out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that, unless his play is so egregiously bad that they don't even feel like they're functioning as an offense. And I think the other thing we have to take with a grain of salt, too, is Nathan Peterman comes into the game and onto the field when it's 43-3, I think it was, and there's 7-8 minutes left in the game. And at that point in the game, the Saints are handing you yardage in exchange for time on the clock. They're giving you time. They're giving you yards. They're giving you opportunities to complete passes, because they would rather give up yards in exchange for time on the clock, because they know the game's decided. So my point there is, what Nathan Peterman was seeing defensively from the Saints was in stark contrast to what Tyrod Taylor was seeing from the Saints when it was still a game.
Chris, you think teams now have a book on Tyrod? Like, it doesn't seem like teams are rushing him the same way they did last year or the year before, right, which would allow him to get out of that pocket and scramble for big yardage. Teams don't seem to be rushing him that way. They're dropping guys back and saying, you beat us through the air.
Right. Yesterday, mostly four-man rush, not a whole lot of blitz at all. And this is a Saints team that coming into the game had the third highest blitz percentage in the NFL defensively at just over 36%. So that's a high number, because I think the top two teams are just barely over 40. They backed off. They said, we're going to drop seven and let's see you beat us. And I think there is a recognition of Tyrod by opponents that he is not a high-risk passer. He is not going to put it in a spot sometimes where he even thinks it might be a 50-50 ball, especially early in the game. I think he's very averse to putting a ball in a place where it could become a turnover, especially early in games, and I think opponents have picked up on that. And they know this guy is not going to throw it unless he knows the guy's open or knows the guy can win for him on a play. And because of that, they say, all right, well, let's drop everybody into coverage and make everybody look covered. And he's going to check it down and take the easy thing in front of him rather than take the high-risk play, high reward. And, yeah, opponents are doing that now.
I talked to Donald about this, Chris, in our first hour. You know, and there is not going to be a quarterback change this week, obviously. But there was one play yesterday, second quarter. The Bills had the ball, their own 30-yard line, first down there. Still a game, down 14-3. And it was, you know, the caller mentioned Kelvin Benjamin. He was there and could have been open. He'd gone in motion and was down the left side of the field. Tyrod completely ignored him, checked it down for a completed pass to LeSean McCoy that went for 1 yard.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that drives, I think, Bills fans crazy. It's maddening. I mean, we talked about this all last week. Yes, Kelvin Benjamin is a great weapon to have. Is Tyrod going to use him? The answer yesterday, based on plays like that, is no. He didn't use him yesterday.
You can't have a player of that caliber not see a football for the better part of 3.5 quarters. I mean, he got his all three of his targets on the opening drive. Nobody threw to him again until 4 minutes left in the game. Especially in a game where you've gone to all pass mode based on the score on the board. Mm-hmm. You're in throw mode. If you can't get it to that guy, yes, that is a problem. 100% agree. 100% agree. You're in all pass mode. You're down 11. You got to put it in the air. You got to pull the trigger. You got to take some risk. And, you know, if you don't trust that guy with 36-inch right. arms who can go up and get it higher than anybody else, I don't know who you trust.
Right. And look, you, especially when you're in throw mode and you're trying to come back, you can't sit back there and wait for, because now they're just dropping everybody back. Nobody's going to come open. They're not going to come wide open. So now you have to take those risks. And he wasn't doing it yesterday. And you can't, when you have a Kelvin Benjamin, look, there, you can't even use the excuse that they don't have that rapport with each other. At this point, you've got to just get the rapport and throw them the ball.
Well, you know? And that's the thing, too. I mean, okay, you say when it was still a game, maybe you don't want to get too risky when it's 14-3. But when you're down 27-3 or 30-3, what do you have
let's
to
just,
lose?
Let's just get
what
this
difference does it
right
make
now?
If you commit a turnover? And here's the thing, too. If it's 14-3 and you make that pass to Kelvin Benjamin right. and it's deep, maybe it shifts the thinking of that defensive coordinator on the other sideline. Oh, you know, they can hit some big plays here. Maybe we got to back off a little bit. Maybe we got to get some pressure to force him to check it down sooner rather than giving him time to look downfield. You know, you make one big play, it changes the dynamics. It changes the thinking of the people on the other sideline. And maybe the play calling shifts just ever so slightly, and that's the difference you need to get your offense in a rhythm and string some positive plays together. I think I'm not going to pretend to know what Tyrod thinks in his head, but it's hard not to believe that he's so risk-averse because he's worried about something bad happening instead of having the confidence to believe I can make something good happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the line that people want him to be on the other side of that line right. more than the conservative side. I get that. I get that criticism, and I get that frustration from Bills fans completely.
And the frustration boils over into, you know, make the quarterback change now. That's out there. We've taken a few calls on that. And Sean McDermott talked about it last hour when he met with the media about the calls for Nathan Peterman to take over at quarterback. Here's what the head coach said.
Well, I understand where they're coming from on that. Nathan's, you know, he's a good player. I like what he did yesterday. I think that he did some good things in the game yesterday. So, you know, I know where they're coming from on that. From a fan standpoint,
we all know where that's coming from and why people feel that way.
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing too, and I don't think fans ever really consider this. They just want the thing fixed.
Yeah,
and they'll try anything but what's not working to fix it. But what you have to also take into consideration is what Sean McDermott faces every day as the head coach. This is a guy who is trying to build a football team and has tabbed Tyrod Taylor, one of the leaders of this football team. He's a captain, and I'll agree as much as anybody else that the results were not there this week. The results weren't there last week, but I don't think that one's on Tyrod. This one, you can put a fair share of the blame on him. You could put a fair share of the blame on both sides of the line of scrimmage, guys losing there on almost every play. But for McDermott, what he's working with here, what he's trying to build and grow is a culture. And Tyrod is one of those guys that does everything exactly the way this coaching staff wants it done, from a preparation perspective, from a leadership perspective, in many cases, from an execution perspective. On game day, Sunday, it wasn't there. How long do you let that persist if it shows up again? That's up to Coach McDermott. But it's a difficult spot for him here because it's the leader of your offense. Yep. And if you go away from him, it's over.
Yeah.
There's no going back. And that might be completely fine for the majority of Tyrod critics out there. They're probably already done with him after yesterday. Get it. But what coach has to deal with is a far bigger picture than simply, we got to fix the quarterback, get him out of there, put the other kid in. It goes so much deeper than that on so many levels, from trying to build the fabric of a team that plays consistent football week to week There's just so many more layers to it for a head coach than for a fan who says, just put the other guy in.
See, I think coaches, and like you're talking about, fans don't think about this side of it. But coaches have a fine line of when you send messages throughout your team when you make certain moves. Mm-hmm. And you have your quarterback, the captain of your offense, making a move like that now puts everybody on pins and needles, which people would say, well, they need to be on pins and needles. Well, you also don't want your entire team out there feeling like if you make one mistake,
they don't want
you're
going to
be benched. Right, exactly.
They don't want them out there gripping.
And so you have to, as a coach, you have to walk that fine line of when do I make that move? If the move is truly there to be made, like when is it that time to make the move? Because it does send a message when you change. When you make a move like that, the captain, the quarterback, and bench him and bring in a rookie a late-round rookie at
Let's see what you get out of your vets after that. Right. You know what I mean? So there's you got to gauge the temperature of the room. And for a first-year head coach, that's not always an easy thing to do. All these guys, in large part, are new to him. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of guys he's worked with before, you know, on a daily basis, mainly the Carolina transfers that are here now. But beyond that, I mean, this is the first go-round with this largely this locker room. And he works very hard to keep the pulse of the locker room with his leadership council and checking in with them. He has a open door down near the locker room, a little satellite office of his that he tries to pull guys in and talk with them and get a feel for how things are in the locker room as opposed to maybe what the coaches are thinking upstairs. I'm not saying the guy doesn't do his homework. He absolutely does, but this is his first trip on the merry-go-round as a head coach, and knee-jerk reactions are probably not the way to go as much as you know, the Bills fan base would like to see it.
Got time for one more call while Chris Brown joins us. Dave in Amherst. Hello, Dave. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Sure. A quick question, and then I'd like to give you my take on the recent fiascos. First of all, it's not even up for debate that on offense, if you can't open holes and protect your quarterback, you can't score.
Right.
And, of course, on defense, if you can't plug holes and put pressure on the QB, where are you going? I mean, that's high school strategy. A couple of years ago, Adam Bonini had a call-in show and asked the fans what we thought is the answer to the Bills being successful. And when I told him what I just put before you, he said, and I quote, "Dave, you're absolutely right." I said to Adam, "So, is the show over?" Well, anyway, Todd's a decent quarterback, and Shady, arguably a top-three running back. But without making the acquisition of eight superb linemen at the end of the season, you're going directly to the golf course. All the rhetoric from your great show comes down to results, often harsh, but always fair. So my question is this.
Dave, have you written this down, by the way?
Need to upgrade both the offensive and defensive lines in a major way? Thank you.
Yeah, I think you do. That's why I said the bigger problem goes beyond Tyrod. It's about the offensive and defensive line. So, you know, I appreciate you repeating what I said 10 minutes ago. but, yeah, that's where it starts and ends for me. It starts up front on both sides of the ball. Coach McDermott said it right after the press conference right after the game yesterday in his press conference. I think it was the second thing he said. I mean, it was evident to him, and he didn't even have to watch the tape, that they lost at the line of scrimmage for the second straight week. And when you lose there, everything else falls apart. You can't function as an offense if you do not have consistent offensive line play. You can't get off the field if you don't have consistent defensive line play. The Bills had neither. You saw the result. End of story. I don't know if you need to end the show too, Murph, but that's the end of that as far as that dissertation goes.
The quote from McDermott, second answer yesterday, we know it starts up front. You've got to win at the line of scrimmage. That's where the game is won, is up front. We've got to do a better job there. I agree with that.
That is every team, offensive and defensive, line of scrimmage. If you can't control it, you will get beat like they got beat yesterday against the worst teams.
Yep. Chris, before we let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot with our Twitter poll here.
Awesome.
Yeah. You can handle this. Not the only thing to be fixed, but what would be the first thing? So if you're Sean McDermott walking in here this morning, what's at the top of your to-do list? What's the first thing you'd fix to get the Bills back on track? Half of our respondents on Twitter say run defense. 38% say fix the quarterback. 7% say fix what's wrong with the rushing offense. 4% say something else. I think all of them are worthy fixes, but what would be at the top of your list? It's a tough question, Chris.
Yeah,
I know you can handle it.
I think it's got to be run defense because you can't give up 300 yards rushing. Yeah.
You can't give up 190 the week before.
Can't give up 190 yards rushing. You're not going to win a football game. I don't care how well your offense is doing.
Six rushing touchdowns.
Because what numbers like that mean is your defense is not getting off the field until the other team scores, and that puts your offense at a disadvantage because it's going to change their play calling because they're behind. It's going to give them less time with the football because you can't get off the field. Look at the time of possession yesterday. Mm. 41, almost 42 minutes of possession time for the Saints to 18 for the Bills. I mean, Tre'Davious White, I think, played 95 plays from scrimmage yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
The Bills have 45 plays on offense.
Yeah. So, to me, it's the run defense because if that is better, you know, if that is gets back to a level where it was at least, you know, where it was top 10 level here early in the season – you get back to that, now you're getting the ball back. Now your offense gets more possessions. Forget about even time of possession. They have more opportunities with the football. Mm-hmm. They had 10 possessions yesterday. Most teams have 12 to 13. So you're sacrificing 2 to 3 possessions for your offense to do something with the ball just because you can't get off the field. So all those other things certainly have merit, but you got to tie up. You got to fix the run defense. That's number one right now, so you can give your offense more chances with the football and hopefully improve on those other things that were lacking.
You know, this is what's so hard because the offense, when they got the ball, three and out, and it brings your defense back out, and they're tired of trying to tackle.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah,
it's a vicious cycle. I don't debate that for a second, which is why you could probably have a pretty good debate and about maybe fixing the run game too, because if you can't fix what was your bread and butter for the better part of the last 2 years, that puts more pressure on Tyrod. And I don't know if Tyrod's the caliber of quarterback to carry an offense, and certainly yesterday didn't present any signs that he is. So you got to do those two things. We go back to the old Marv Levy saying, run, stop the run, and that's really where it's going to start and end with this version of the Buffalo Bills here in 2017.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, spitting out truth like he always does. Seriously.
You got to dish it. There's no sense in holding on to it, right, Murph? Get it out there.
Get it out there
in the atmosphere.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Chris joined
us today. He'll be back on the air with us Wednesday as the Bills get ready to play again. Yes, there is another game coming up, too. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a documentary that's going to air in a couple of weeks on WNED-TV, public television in Buffalo, called Ralph, a biographical documentary of Bills founder, longtime owner Ralph Wilson. That's coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Ralph enjoyed life.
He did love the game. He loved to be part of it.
He knew how much these two communities had given to him. His upbringing in Detroit, and of course, Buffalo.
An excerpt of a special program that's going to be airing on WNED-TV, public television here in Buffalo next month, and will be premiered tonight, a free screening of Ralph. It's called Ralph, of course, named after Ralph Wilson, the Buffalo Bills founder and former owner who passed away a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Joining Donald and I in studio, the co-producer of the documentary Ralph. She is senior producer at WNED-TV. Happy to have Lynn Bader with us. Lynn, thanks for coming by here.
Glad to be here. Absolutely.
What a great subject for a documentary, because first of all, he lived to be 90 or plus, mm-hmm. but also just such a wide variety of experience that Mr. Wilson had throughout his life.
Well, absolutely. I think, at WNED, it's interesting because when you think about when Mr. Wilson passed away, a lot of the local television stations did sort of tribute shows or things that we could do. But at WNED, we don't have a daily sports program, Mm-hmm. Why? What in the world? But what we do well is tell human stories, tell these biographies. And we felt like it was time that we gave Mr. Wilson his due on our station.
A nice variety of people that you talked to for this documentary, mm-hmm. too. Tell us who some of the folks were you talked to.
Well, it's interesting. There were about 9 or 10 folks that we interviewed. We interviewed Mary Wilson, and then we interviewed Mr. Wilson's niece, Mary Owen. We have Marv Levy, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas. We have Greg Tranter. Now, if you're familiar with Greg, he's got this great Buffalo Bills collection, certainly surpasses anyone that I've ever met. And he's a football historian in his own right. We have Roger Goodell is in the program. It's narrated by Chris Berman. So it's really a wonderful mix of folks who knew Mr. Wilson and, you know, had sort of the inside story on his life.
Did it take you a while to get on everyone's schedules? I mean,
yes.
You some busy people.
Well, I would say we probably started talking about producing Ralph nearly a year ago, you know, and that's what goes into one of these programs. It's 30 minutes long, but really it's about getting in touch with doing all the research and then figuring out the story that we are able to tell, want to tell. And then, you know, back in May, we spent a couple of days in Michigan doing some interviews there. And then, you know, you come back here, and really working with the Bills has been wonderful because, you know, we work with Scott Birchtold, and he got us into the stadium, and we did our interviews right here behind the glass in the stadium as some of the backdrops with the players. And it's really, but it takes several months to put together.
With Lynn Bader, she is co-producer of Ralph, the documentary that is going to be screened tonight. I know you want to get that out there. Tell
yes.
me, folks can come and watch it, get a preview tonight,
They
right?
can, right. So the show actually does air December 15th, which is great. So that's just a little over a month away. But you don't have to wait. You can go to WNED right now. We have a free preview screening that's going to start tonight at 6 o'clock. So if you go on the web, WNED.org, all you have to do is register. So, you know, you have to make a reservation, but the screening is free. We're going to have not just the screening, but Greg Tranter will have some of his memorabilia there. Mary Wilson will be there. She'll make some remarks. And we're going to have some conversation after the screening with John Grant, the other program producer, Thurman Thomas, and Vic Carucci. So it's going to be a wonderful evening. You know, you'll be back in your car and home a little after 8 o'clock.
But you have to register to go
you
tonight.
You do have to register, absolutely. But there are, you know, it's interesting. This is a screening that we wanted to open up to the public as much as we possibly could, because that's the kind of guy Ralph was. He was truly an owner that was a fan, just like you were a fan. And so we wanted to make it as available as we could, and that's why it's free. So we hope people will come out and join us.
Tell me something that you learned about him that would shock you.
That would shock me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, when folks start to talk about Ralph as a person and the way he was, you know, you think about the Bills' ups and downs throughout the decades. And you guys have spent the last couple of hours talking about yesterday's
downs.
Down.
Yeah, it's been down.
And yet you think every Monday morning Mr. Wilson had to wake up and have the same feeling, you know? And he felt it to his core. You hear them talk about it in the documentary, that he felt it just as hard as the fan did. But, you know, whether it was his entrepreneurial spirit, his never-give-up spirit, whatever it was, he was able to kind of brush it off and say, tomorrow's another day. Let's keep going. We have another game next week.
You know what always impressed me about Mr. Wilson, and I hope this came up in the documentary, was, you know, the guy who achieved so much in business, you know, with television and insurance and paving, obviously success in pro football.
Right.
And, you know, a multimillionaire. And yet he'd come to Buffalo and he'd fly into Buffalo, rent a Ford Taurus,
yeah.
go over to Charlie the Butcher and get a beef on whip,
yes.
drive himself everywhere, drive himself out here. He did not have the trappings of a multimillionaire, and I love that about him.
Not at all. And, you know, Miss Wilson talked about that, too. You know, she says people called him Rental Ralph because that's exactly what it was. And he would, I guess he would come to practice in these corduroy pants.
Oh, yeah.
It would be like 90 degrees out.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter to him, you know, didn't matter to him. He was out there. He was, they said that his favorite outfit would be like khakis, his blue sweater. He had a couple of blue sweaters he liked the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great. The family was wonderful in terms of opening up their archives, their photographs to us. You'll see some young Ralph photos. You'll see some sort of middle-aged Ralph photos. We talk about how Ralph and Mary met. You know, we see Ralph playing tennis in tennis shorts. So it's pretty cool.
Now, you said you, obviously, you interviewed Thurm and, you know, some former players of his. And the relationship between, for me as a former player, the relationship between an owner and the player, you don't really see, some owners you might see around the team quite
yes.
often, but you don't have like a close, close relationship. What was their relationship with?
Very close. It was like family. Awesome. I mean, it truly, truly was. And I bet that you can appreciate that as a player too, knowing that, you know, the owner has your back in so many ways rather than just on the football field. I mean, this was a guy who saw his men as his sons. I mean, I literally think that's the way he looked at it every single day. He would do anything for them and did so many things for them in front of, but mainly behind the scenes throughout his entire career. You know, I think the relationship that he had with the players, because of how much he loved the game, just came through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting to see them talk about him because it's very much like a father figure.
Lynn Bader is in studio with us, co-producer of the documentary Ralph, which is going to be a free screening tonight at WNED in downtown Buffalo. It will air on December 15th. Tell me about your team that put this together, you and John Grant, and how many people did you have involved in this project?
Well, you know, I think some productions require, you know, scores of people. This was a bit of a smaller group. We had John Grant, who is our chief program officer, but a wonderful producer in his own right. He produces regularly. And then myself, our editor, Chris Beauvais. And then Jim Zinkowski was our main shooter for I think all of our interviews. And then we, you know, hire sound recordists, and then it's just that a small team of folks within the building that are really just working on it pretty much constantly to get it done.
How long is the documentary?
It's 30 minutes.
30 minutes,
so,
okay.
Yeah, half hour. Could have been,
yeah.
I mean, could have been a lot. We always say that, but, you know.
That's always interesting to me as well, when you have to make everything, compile everything into 30 minutes. When you have so much information, well, what do we leave in this thing and what do we take out of it?
Right. Well, and the crew that works on it, we're the only ones who really know what ended up getting left out and maybe that we wanted in. But that, you know, that's sort of the way it goes. Mm-hmm. But we're happy to bring this half hour to public television audiences, which, you know, may seem a little bit unusual for us to produce this kind of a program, but really it's not. This is a human story about an amazing guy who certainly now has had a huge impact in our community. That's one of the things we talked about within the show that you'll find is, you know, what is Mr. Wilson's legacy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it him as a football owner? Is it him as a philanthropist? You know, someone in the community who wants to give back? Is it both? You know, we talk about all of those issues. I just think it's an amazing legacy. And he would, you know, Mary says, you know, he would be embarrassed. He'd be like, why do they want to come and do a TV show on me? You know, he was just that kind of guy. But what a legacy.
Legacy in Buffalo with football and philanthropy. And in Detroit. Is the show going to air in Detroit?
We're hoping that the show does air in Detroit. They're interested in airing it. So it will probably air in Detroit as well. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm from Southeast Michigan.
Okay.
And so it was great to kind of go back and see how much he cared about both of those regions. And he has, it's also interesting to talk to his niece and others about the different charities and issues that he was interested in supporting.
Lynn, let's talk about the broadcast now
as
we wrap things up. The broadcast is just about a month away on Channel 17 WNED, right?
That's right. December 15th, it's Friday, 8 o'clock. You can see it right there, Friday, December 15th at 8 o'clock on WNED. Please, you know, tune in. And if you can make it tonight, we'd love to see you tonight as well.
And tell us again about the arrangements for tonight, how folks can stop by tonight.
Okay, it's easy as pie. You can just go to WNED.org. You can go ahead and register for tickets. They are free. You can actually reserve up to 4 seats. But you have to do it quickly so that you get there. The event starts at 6 o'clock tonight. We hope to see folks there.
I can't wait to see this.
Thank you.
Congratulations on this. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Lynn Bader is co-producer of the documentary Ralph, a free screening tonight. Go to WNED.org for details on that. And also it airs on December 15th on WNED-TV. All right, Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Sean McDermott, we picked up his news conference at 1 o'clock today, and he talked about his mood after the terrible loss to the Saints yesterday.
My mood, you know, is disappointed. I'm disappointed, but I'm upbeat, you know, because I know we're building and I know that we didn't play up to the standard we've played at before, and we've coached that before. So for that reason, I'm upbeat and I'm looking forward to getting back to work.
John McDermott talking about the game yesterday. He also said that on the injury front, Jerry Hughes day to day with the shin injury suffered yesterday. Cordy Glenn day to day with his foot and ankle problems. Also day-to-day, Zay Jones and E.J. Gaines. And on the quarterback question, the coach said, I believe in Tyrod. Tyrod's our starter. See if we can squeeze in a phone call here in the remaining couple of minutes. Jim in North Tonawanda. Hello, Jim. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
And I can't think of a better way to end today's program than to have Lynn Bader on talking about something upbeat, because the first couple hours has been a really downtrodden thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if you can keep it that way.
Really deserve that. In other words, I know that sounds crazy, but boy, I was expecting a better off effort than what we had yesterday. But we know that McDermott is building, and we're glad of that, and we're happy for that. And I think we can say that the light is at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train, okay? So we're happy about that, and we realize that there are going to be better things happening. The thing with Ralph is the best way to end the show. But, boy, I don't think it's been a long time since I've seen the Buffalo Bills get steamrolled like they did yesterday. I saw linebackers that looked like they had Velcro on their jerseys. They could not get off the block. And you could start with defensive line and go everywhere. And they talk about McAdoo not playing for McAdoo in New York. Yesterday there looked like times when we just kind of gave up too. But we got to keep believing in the Bills, and that's the way we are here in New York, Western New York. We go nuts for this team, and we watch them, and we care about them, and we pray for them. And holy Toledo, let's watch the thing on Ralph and keep building from there and keep the show going, because we need the bright spots. Thank you, guys, and have a good day.
Thank you, Jim. I love that call.
I'll say this, and this goes back to the summertime when trades were made and different things were happening, and people were like, man, this team is tanking. You know, when you're in a transition period from coach to coach and the coach is trying to instill his own culture, there will be bad days. All right? There's going to be bad games like there was the past 2 weeks. There are going to be days where guys are traded away, guys are cut that people might love. You know, so this is just something we got to ride out, you know, and hopefully the team plays better the rest of the season. Maybe they'll end up in the playoffs. Maybe not. But you want to build a team that's consistently in the playoffs. And so you have to go through some ups and downs if you want to do that.
Well put, Donald and Jim in North Tonawanda. Thanks to all of you who called today. And more discussion on this coming up tomorrow. Steve Tasker will join us tomorrow. Trey Wingo from ESPN's NFL coverage will join us tomorrow. And Donald will have his nuts and bolts breakdown of something, I'm sure, that went wrong in Sunday's game, right? There's no shortage
something.
We'll figure out for tomorrow. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Back tomorrow at noon with John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.